Thank you, Madam Clerk, and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the rainy day, December 2nd, 2014 edition of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. If you do need some help hearing proceedings in chambers, please know we do have hearing assist devices stored at the end of the dais. And with that, if you would all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, changes to today's agenda, please.
Amendment number one to December 2nd, 2014 board agenda. Added item to closed session, personnel. One, consider public employee appointment for the position of Director of Parks and Recreation. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour notice requirement.
15 in the Water Master Plan update is 7,184. At the beginning of 2014, Templeton's population was already 7,700. Presently, there are 61 single residents under construction. Templeton was issued 800 building permits, each permit assuring an adequate water supply for 20 years. Other proposed projects include the Hoover construction of over 100 single residents and the Las Tablas multi-complex, which may include a three-story hotel. In the master plan report, current water demands are adjusted to a five-year average over the 206-210 time frame in order to account for the high variability of water at this time. These figures are not relevant. Also, it appears the annual demands may exceed our annual supplies. Supply availability may be further limited by conditions beyond the district's control based on such factors as environmental circumstances and drought conditions. Templeton's Ordinance number 2014-1 states that approximately 50% of its water capacity is allocated for emergency and firefighting use. I could not find where the level is at the present time. Because of the severity of the drought, it's going to take more than 1 to 2 years of rain to restore the water supply. Digging deeper wells or more wells will not solve the problem. Conclusion. I would like to deny the building permits that are been proposed for the mental hospital and assisted living facility and to impose a moratorium on all of Templeton's future building effective immediately, and that said moratorium not be removed until an adequate and sustainable water supply has been attained. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Ms. Levine. Eric Greening, followed by Julie Rodewald.
Good morning. I think everyone, except maybe the people who don't have a sheltered place to spend the night, is rejoicing out there right now. Obviously, this wonderful rain that we're getting and should continue getting for some time is excellent news, but we shouldn't fool ourselves that it will make much of a dent in the drought unless we have about 40 days and nights of it, hopefully not sequentially. But in any event, I did want to address a part of the drought update that I think may be obsolete compared to something else that's also before you. On page 2 near the bottom, it says, quote, "An interconnection between the existing Nacimiento Water Project pipeline and the existing Salinas pipeline is being pursued through the state's drought emergency funds. The board approved this project on June 17, 2014, to be included in the Earworm IRWM drought grant application," unquote. Now, obviously, a little bit later today, right after public comments, you'll be dealing with a hearing item in which you make a decision whether to simply leave it out of your use of that grant funding or to do a partial project with a piece of that grant funding, and I will address that decision when we get to that hearing item. But I did want to say right now under this item that obviously we do have an update on that information, and I hope that where we see the words, the board approved this project, it's a sort of an awkward construction, because I think it's a dependent on the to be included in the application. But make no mistake, you have not approved the project as a project because you have not yet reviewed the environmental determination. There is a, in my opinion, very flawed negative declaration that, for whatever reason, has not yet come before you. And I think because it is flawed, it could not be approved, and the project it describes could not be approved without, in my opinion, an environmental impact report and a genuine alternatives analysis to look at alternatives that could solve the problem. In any event, this is not an approved project, and I'll have more to say from a different angle when we get to item 18. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Ms. Rodewald, followed by Laura Mordaunt.
Good morning, Board. Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. I'm just here on item number 7, which is the certification of the November election. I wanted to thank all of those involved. It's obviously a community effort, our precinct workers, our the other county staff that help us out on Election Day and Election Night, and most importantly, the voters. So while we did have the lowest turnout in 30, we have in place. So again, I just want to thank everybody who decided to participate in this election. I wish there had been more, but at least we got as high as we did. Thank you.
Madam Clerk, on behalf of the board, thanks and congratulations to your staff and particularly to you for the conclusion of another outstanding piece of work.
Thank you.
Ms. Mordaunt, followed by Bill Pelfrey.
I wanted to address item 10 on the consent agenda. I have three words to this board: unfunded accrued liability. This item, this term compares the difference between accrued liability to assets. What you take in versus what you spend. And if you take in less than what you spend, you have a deficit. That's an issue in this county. So when will our Board of Supervisors and our city councils ever again balance the budget, not carry two sets of books? When you add it all up, the county's liability for this unfunded accrued liability is well over $400 million. That's significant. Now, San Luis Obispo City Council, this CalPERS report that was given last week, or prior to Thanksgiving, it talks about San Luis Obispo, and it won't be until the year 2044 if this plan is adhered to, meaning that the economy grows. Then we'll get to what we take in, we spend. That's 30 years. 30 years. Can you bet on 30 years that that will work? The unfunded accrued liability is a huge burden. Those who made the decisions over time to get us here were probably thinking like each of you are thinking right now. What a nice thought. Gee, no raises. They haven't had raises. It's Christmas time. Bonuses are nice. Of course, that's a non-public service attitude. I'm okay, you're okay. Everyone gets a trophy. Is that where we're at? So I'm here to slap you in the face and say, sober up. What were you thinking? This is illegal. This is the voters' money, not yours to spend. If you vote for collectivists and the ends justify the means representatives, you get the above conditions. And our real issues are our economy suffers. Economic health resides in the private sector. Remember, this doesn't earn money. And in turn can create a healthy public sector. That's where your health is, for the public sector. Right now, the public sector is overwhelming the private sector, and that spells disaster. So vote no.
Thank you, Ms. Mordaunt. Mr. Pelfrey, followed by Ben DeFatto.
Bill Pelfrey, consent agenda. Item number one really annoys me. You have it on the agenda. You have two parts on the agenda. There's actually four parts. You're leaving off the section about, now this is from the staff report, an amendment to Title 22, which says residential uses of in the agricultural land use category. Now, that's the only place it's mentioned, and yet you're going to vote on it today. But the other one, the much more annoying one to me, is an amendment to Title 22 in the specific use standards for various other sections to replace references to the United Building Code with the California Building Standards Code. Now, UBC is used throughout the United States. It says when your house is built, that's built to code, and that it has to live up to that code. Now, you've made many things that you want us to do about it, update everything on sale. And so, therefore, I think what you need to do is make a matrix comparing the California Building Standards Code and the UBC. And why are you getting off it? Is there a hidden agenda in here? I mean, just like this. Is this some kind of Machiavellian thing where deception and lies and deceit are formed? Now, in order to back that up, look at number 10. You know, it's not really your money, and just because you're leaders, the Machiavellian thing says you get rewarded. We, the people, get the shaft, but you don't care because you're the leaders. Now, if that's what your agenda is, you're succeeding at pissing off a lot of people. Now, you say it's because health care went up. Well, geez, whose didn't? My wife...
Mr. DeFatto, followed by Mike Brown.
I'm wearing this cap because it might rain in here. Ben DeFatto from Los Osos wanted to comment on item 10 about increasing the water rates for our community. We know that most of that money is to cover the cost of the basin plan that this board has never looked at, and the many seniors, disabled, and low income of those that reside here can't afford. Stop spending money we don't have. I ask that you not approve increasing the water rates to this little community. Power to the people.
Mr. Brown, followed by Andrea Seastrand.
Mike Brown, representing CoLab. We would ask you to not approve item 10, the $1,000 cash payment to every employee. That's in their paycheck. It's not in a benefit allowance for health care. They could spend that money any way they want in Las Vegas or whatever. The real question is, and I've talked to a number of your staffers on this, that theoretically what you're doing is proffering this in an effort to have the unions make less demands for COLAs and other benefit increases in the ongoing negotiations. So perhaps you discussed that as part of your strategy in closed session. But you never reported out from closed session that you took an action to give the employees $1,000 as part of your labor negotiation strategy. So I think it's problematical in that way. Another question is, will the board members themselves, you five and your ledge aides, receive this? I've had two different answers on that score. And then will Supervisor Gibson be voting on it if it's to be given to ledge aides? Last week, you raised fees almost $2 million. This week, you're giving away $2.4 million. But last week, you rationalized the fee increases as trying to protect the general fund. So this gift is $2.4 million of pure general fund, and the way you're doing it, you're not even laying it off on the categorical programs that are funded by the state and the feds. You're just whacking it right out of your general fund surplus, and you ought to think about that. This afternoon or later this morning, you're going to ask the home builders to take a 5% hit on the in lieu tax. this thing came up, we first saw it Wednesday when the agenda was posted Thanksgiving Eve, very little time to consider it. And then bottom line, I think the way you've processed this, and despite the rationalizations that I've heard from staff, and of course County Council did sign this as to form and legality. Nevertheless, I think the way you've done it, you're violating the Constitution, Article 16 in public finance, and this is a gift of public funds for which you are not receiving a current or future service. You're saying, oh, people took a hit in the recession, and now we're going to make that up. And that is absolutely a gift of public funds.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Ms. Seastrand, followed by Gary Kirkland.
Andrea Seastrand, Grover Beach. You know, one of my favorite quotes regarding world happenings, you know, on the stage today, down to what's happening at the local levels, is a quote from Alice in Wonderland, and you all know it. It gets curiouser and curiouser. I guess Alice was surprised, you know, for a moment she quite forgot how to speak good English. So I guess I'm here to say I'm not using good English. It gets curiouser and curiouser to see item 10, the $1,000 cash payment health care cost offset, being on the consent calendar. And I want to say, whose idea was that? It's interesting to read the Tribune this morning because it says that we finished with a fiscal year that ended June 30th with a budget surplus of $30.1 million. And I just say to the taxpayer, get your credit card out. I know what this is like. They use this newspeak in Sacramento as well as Washington, forgetting to tell people they were trillions, billions of dollars in the hole, and that's where we are in the county. We have a great amount of debt, unfunded accumulated pension liability as well as pension obligation bonds and utility bonds, and I'm sure it's gone over the $750 million. So the taxpayer has the credit card out there and is supporting this, and yet we find dollars now to offset our great employees. There's no argument on that, but is this the time to do it? I remind you, there are many people in this county, personally that I know, that are suffering from the recession. The recession has, been...
The way to do this is, one, if it's $1,000 that the board, which is in their purview, cut the property taxes for every owner in this county, $1,000. For renters, they could give them a check for $1,000 if they don't own property. And they could use this money, just like the county employees could, for their health benefits. For the homeless people, they could give them a voucher of some sort to spend for their health care, so that every person who suffered in this county would benefit just like the county employees do. And you could do that, and that way it would be fair to everyone. Now, I don't know if the county has that kind of money. And if you do, why do you have that kind of money that you could give $1,000 to every person who lived in this county who suffered from the recession? Now, I don't know what you're going to do about people who just moved here and didn't suffer in this county from the recession. I have no idea how. Or you just hired somebody who started working at the county last week, didn't suffer from the recession. They came from someplace else. Are they going to get the $1,000 also? And all of us have seen our health care costs go up, not just county employees. Don't we deserve the $1,000 also? And our president promised that our health care bills would go down by $2,500 a year. It looks like you believe they're going up by $1,000. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing this. What does that say about our president? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kirkland. Ms. Dawson, followed by Tom Dawson.
Good morning, Elsa Dawson. I'm very excited about the rain, and I hope you are too, and there's more where it came from. We're going to get more. But back to the things that are really of the purview of the board. Oh, before I begin, I just want to publicly thank Mrs. Rodewald for her job. She and her team are phenomenal. I had the privilege of observing them at work, and I have so much respect for their job. So, thank you. In my time here before the board, I've seen some outrageous resolutions, But number 10 really takes the fruitcake. many of the previous speakers have spoken to its illegality and to its just outrageousness because of our financial situation. And, you know, I really wish that I had known this ahead of time, because when I was setting up my Christmas shopping list for people, I could have calculated in that I was going to be giving to the county employees. I wasn't prepared for that. And I hardly have enough to give to the list I have with my children and grandchildren and loved ones. I wonder if we could get a list of names of these people so that I could add them to my Christmas list? Or I guess getting a thank you note from them is really out of the question. But I just wanted to say, please vote no on number 10. It's illegal. It doesn't make any sense when you consider our county debt. And as several of the speakers have said, that's our money, not yours. Thank you.
Mr. Dawson, followed by Greg Graywald.
Tom Dawson, I was looking at item number 3 on the consent calendar, and it's a monthly drought report. And to date, the county has received 73 responses to the supplemental survey. Of the 73 respondents, 33%, or about 24, have reported that their wells have gone dry, and about 10% are trucking in water. That's about 7 homes. And there's no data about the location of the wells, their depth, in which basin they are located. So these are not even Paso Robles water basin, possibly. We don't really know. We don't know anything else. Again, even if all these wells were located in the basin, which supposedly has 8,000 wells, 24 dry wells does not constitute an imminent threat to the public health and safety and welfare. And these are the standards on which the board justified the Paso Robles water basin moratorium. I think you ought to look at it again and get these people that have dry wells some water. And then it is raining. The other item, number 10, I would like to get $1,000 off of my taxes. I'm just about to pay my taxes. I want $1,000 off.
5% pay cut when I retired. I didn't retire so I could pay for somebody else's health care, because they can't work enough to pay for their own health care. I have my health care. They shouldn't have voted for the goober that's in the office right now if they didn't want their medical plan changed. This is a direct impact of what happened over the last 6 years in this country, with people thinking they're going to get a free ride, and somebody always has to pay for somebody else's stuff. You don't get anything for free. And so instead of keep hammering the property owner with a bill where they only go, oh, it's only $6 more per $100,000, or it's only this, or it's only that. No, it adds up. It adds up quite a bit. And I think it's time that we quit adding things to the property owner's tax base. You want something, let all the people in the community pay for it through sales tax. Then it's shared equally. And then they're paying for their own thing also, because they're spending money in this community. But don't keep going back to the property owners and asking for more and asking for more and asking for more. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graywald. That was our last request to speak, so we'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board. I will ask colleagues if they have items to pull. Mr. Meacham. Ms. Ray.
I'm going to go with 10. Thank
you. Mr. Meacham, any others than 10? Mr. Hill.
10 and just a quick comment on 19.
Ms. Arnold.
Yep, a quick comment on 7 and also 10.
All right, why don't we pick up item 7, Ms. Arnold, and then we'll go to 19, Ms.
So I just wanted, if Julie's still here, she might have. There she is. 19. Your last election. You've just done so much for this county, and I just wanted to thank you again. Yeah. Thanks for being here today.
I'm
going to comment on 7 as well. I saw Julie the day after the election, and when I came down to see her, she said, "Please, Frank, don't ask me for a count." I said, "No, I'm just going to ask you for a hug. You did a great job. Thank you very much, Julie."
You're here.
Bruce, if I may?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't realize what Julie does during the years when we're not having elections going on. And I had the privilege when I was on Arroyo Grande City Council to work with her on the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage. And her professionalism and her depth of knowledge goes far beyond how to run elections properly. And, Julie, I hope that we'll see you on lots of committees after you're all done. I can't imagine that we won't. Thank you.
Indeed. Mr. Hill actually meant item 13. You want to go with that at this
point? Just a quick comment. I see Jeremy here. You don't need to come up. I'm just going to ask if you would come to our next week's Avil Advisory Council to report on this.
Yes.
Absolutely. We got it. All right. On item 10, I'm going to ask CAO Mr. Buckshy to give us the rundown on the issues that were brought up in comment.
Yes, good morning. Dan Buckshy, County Administrative Officer. So a little bit of background about the approach to item number 10, the partial health care offset. As your board is aware, the last 7 years have been very difficult. We implemented what had become known as the pain plan. We took a very methodical approach to that pain plan by asking employees to make concessions, which were made and were fairly considerable. We also scaled back programs and services, and we also dipped into our bank account or our reserves and designations on a short-term, one-time basis to help mitigate the expenditures. As we're aware, the current year is the first year in which we are back in the black, and we have a balanced budget, and the projection going forward is to have a balanced budget. And what we've discussed multiple times during various budget meetings before your board is to take the same very methodical approach to building back our budget, to adding back first and foremost to programs and services, which we did on an incremental basis as part of the 14-15 budget during budget hearings in June of this year, by building back our reserves and designations, our bank account, if you will, which we've done. In fact, our credit rating was upgraded to a AAA from a AA+. So we have emerged from this fiscal downturn in a stronger fiscal condition from which we entered it, which I think there are very few counties in the state or around the country, for that matter, that can accurately make that claim. And then third, and certainly not last and not least, rather, is to incrementally add back to employee compensation in the same methodical manner in which it was reduced over the past several years. You know, we've been in negotiations with several unions. One of the things that we've heard loud and clear is that healthcare costs are going up. To give you a feel for the majority of employees this year alone heading into...
Just to be clear, compensation and benefits in general are not gifts of public funds. It's part of what the county does as long as they're prospective. In this instance, the county and the board sets a bargaining strategy. We're given direction to bargain and meet and confer. The Myers-Milius-Brown Act requires that we meet and confer with all bargaining units. We're in negotiations right now with most bargaining units over this particular one-time issue. We did meet and confer with all of those units. And this particular payment will provide a one-time certainty moving forward for the 2015 increase in health care costs. And again, compensation and benefits are not a gift of public funds. They're part of doing business for the county.
Thank you, Council. Let me come down the dais for comments or questions. Ms. Ray? Mr. Meacham?
Mr. Hill?
Ms. Arnold?
Yeah. Oh, boy. I'm sorry. I'm the only one that has a lot to say here. So I'll start with a question of Rita, maybe, why we couldn't pay this down as part of just to pay down the cafeteria plan, why we took this approach.
Yes, in fact, you and I spoke about this yesterday, and I spoke to the auditor controller yesterday afternoon, and it was more just a process manner of doing it this way. The end result is the same. Each employee does get a cafeteria plan of certain different amounts, and so from a process-wise, from the auditor's office, it was a more streamlined process to put it in each paycheck as opposed to try and get the auditor's office to work through and put it in each cafeteria plan. End result is the same.
Okay. So with that, I had a few comments here, and I just wanted to say this one was a tough one for me because being here, I take it very seriously, the fiscal responsibility that we have to the taxpayers. But the responsibilities that I'm learning to handle as a supervisor, I think three to provide fair compensation to county employees that provide services to us all, to be responsible with the taxpayers' money, and also to provide, and this one might be, this is the one that might create the most challenges, but to provide uninterrupted services to the citizens of the county, and our employees certainly do that. So as Dan said, our county employees are represented by their unions, and salaries and benefits are negotiated continuously. The past decade has seen years of diminished revenues for the county, and while I was not on this board for most of that time, I recognize that the employees and their unions work cooperatively with the board and the administration to control costs, resulting in the financial stability for the county that Dan mentioned. So during this time, reforms were made, I think, all across the state and country, but certainly in this county, to address unsustainable labor costs and mostly unfunded pension liabilities. So now we're looking at rising health care costs, and those are a concern, I think, in the private sector and the public sector. This is an attempt to provide employees with a one-time health care cost offset payment. To me, by offsetting partially the increased out-of-pocket costs for health care benefits that used to just be part of the salary package that our employees received, is a more responsible way to maintain their salaries. This one time does not touch the unfunded pension liabilities that so many of us are concerned with. That being said, I know coming from the private sector for the most of my life, a lot of companies that have had to wrestle with this, private sector companies that have had to wrestle with this same thing. They have employees, what may be amounts to a decrease in salary, or could the reality be, as people are going along doing their job the same way through political policies at every level of our government, here comes these excessive costs that they may or may not be able to afford. And a lot of companies are wrestling with, do we cover that as we used to, or do we just kind of throw that increased cost of health care onto our employees, and what will that do to their quality of life, or even will they be able to continue to live here, et cetera, et cetera. So those are all the kind of the trickle-down and the off-fall from some of the political policies that have been enacted in the last few years. So I wanted to, just before I stop, address a couple of the public comments. I did not vote to raise county fees on the public. I agree with, I think it was Ms. Mordaunt that talked about the general economic stimulus, and I agree with the economic ideology that it's lowering fees and taxes that actually stimulate private sector economy, resulting in increased revenues to a county government. So I want to say that for me, it wasn't, it was in revenue that come to for farm families that the drought has had a real effect on. So I'm not saying it because it doesn't matter to me, but I am saying that if the folks that put me in office feel like, you know, this is something that is not, they wouldn't approve of, I'm quite willing to decline personally, but I really do feel like this is a more responsible way to address the excessive cost of health care to our employees. Through no fault of their own. I don't know who everybody voted for or if they care about these policies or not, but on page 191 of our staff report, it shows the choices that the county employees have for health care and how much those out-of-pocket costs have gone up between 25, almost 26%, and 33%. So to me, if I'm a county employee and I'm working and I've budgeted my household budget and I get slammed with hundreds of dollars a month that I never really had any control over, I think what I see is that we're just bringing them back to to what they expect their salary to be. And, again, I feel that it's a responsible way to do that with a one-time cost that doesn't burden the pension liabilities. Thank you.
Ms. Arnold. Mr. Meacham.
Thank you. Thank you, Supervisor Arnold. Good explanation. But I wanted to ask Mr. Buckshy, there was a comment made about two sets of books. What is that about?
I have absolutely no idea.
Thank you, Mr. Meacham. Mr. Hill.
I just, you know, having been on the board for the six years of the seven-year pain plan that we went through, and, you know, the truth is facts will bear this out, and understanding the county budget is difficult but important before people take on outrage. But this county not only did a great job, the board working with the admin, working with our departments of balancing our budgets as we're required to do each year, but also implementing reforms on pay and pension well before even the state considered it, and working with our employee unions to get through the worst recession that certainly the country's faced without laying people off, because we worked together collaboratively to save jobs. Therefore, we didn't have to see dramatically decreased services, whether those be public safety services or the kind of services that people expect when they come to the planning department or the public works or anything else. As Mr. Buckshy mentioned, we come out of the recession with the highest credit rating, bond rating that the county's ever achieved. This is an ongoing process that this organization has managed to, I think, exemplify the most conservative and responsible kind of budgeting that there has been. And, you know, I, for one, have been not just impressed with the work that our financial team has done and our departments have done, but I'm very proud of it. And while we understand that people want to, you know, it's always going to be fashionable to attack public employees, you know, we've had a lot of sacrifices made so that we could so that all of our employees could continue to provide the services to the community that they expect and that they deserve. And you know, I don't think that it does much good without understanding the entire picture to rely on sources that I think are dishonest and are knowingly so in terms of suggesting things are illegal or suggesting things are, you know, are wrong or suggesting things are giveaways. Those are just not true. So, you know, our budget is available online. And, you know, I always encourage people. It's, you know, when I ran for office, it was by far the most illuminating thing for me to understand how the county organization works and also how public monies are handled. And I just would recommend that to people again.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Well said. You know, I would only add that this is a small step in the direction of keeping employee compensation fair so that we can attract and retain and fairly compensate those who do good work for the county and all our departments. Ms. Arnold, you had further comments?
Just a quick comment, and it was over the two sets of books, and I just know that we had state legislation addressing is the only reason I would know and assume that we're all talking about the same thing. But that will be that in the future, governments at all levels will have to show pension liabilities unfunded. In other words, you have a big debt, but it's usually not included in the annual budget documents, and that it's going to have to be more merged so that folks understand that a balanced budget is kind of
here in our county that represented our county. We had Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton, Napomo all went to the semifinals of the CIF playoffs. Unfortunately,
But fortunately, we have the Pastorals Bearcats playing for the title this Friday night. But my compliments to all of the teams and all of the parents that went and all of the fans that went to support them. It was a great season and a great year for San Luis County.
Do you know of any Bearcat alumni?
There might be. All right. Here to that. So then, to public comment items not on the agenda. Within the purview of the board, we'll start with Laura Mordaunt, followed by Richard Margetson, please.
Two comments. Thank you, Ms. Arnold, about the two sets of books. I mean, that's a terminology I used. And the meaning was exactly what you brought forward, is that to the average person out there, when you say we have a balanced budget, you have a AAA rating. How did you get to a AAA rating? It's a tactic. There are many tactics at play here where you take out bonds and you won't use the money to pay down the unfunded liability so that your ratings go up. I mean, this is smoke and mirrors at times, and that is what I, the public, are upset over, is I want to see what you owe. I don't deal with, I have my balanced budget for what, 24 hours a day a year? But long term, I am in debt, significantly in debt, and at the point where cities are closing down. Stockton, 58% unfunded liability debt. When you rate each of us, the county, the cities, the ratings, when you reach a certain level, you go under. So that is why that is critically important. And that is going to be the topic of conversation for many of us, because we want visibility to that. We want you to honor that, not just spend money. The other is I'm quite concerned about, I don't know how many hours I spent here listening to water. Water, 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 water. Ooh, we don't have any water. Wait, water, water. And we're not going to make money on this as purveyors. And so the basins, because there's multiples, somewhere else, we're not going to allow that. It's never the intention. Well, then why the last meeting was that not followed through on an ordinance which still probably wouldn't solve the problem, but it certainly would have been an intentional step in the direction that what all of you said up here that we're here, which apparently you all were since Ms. Ray was brought on board to make that vote for the urgency ordinance. Water, if it is to not be sold, then why did you sidestep that last week? Or whenever it was. I wasn't here. I'm just saying that sleight of hand, the term two books, whatever, the point is financials and water are critical to all of us.
Thank you, Ms. Mordaunt. Mr. Margetson, followed by Mike Brown.
Richard Margetson, last week you had two ordinances for Los Osos on your agenda. I want to actually thank Mr. Meacham for keeping one of the ordinances intact. It is a tool in the community for saving water. But I wanted to clarify some things. You know, we make public comment, comes back to the board, and you get the last word. Not you. I'm talking about the board gets the last word. And we have to come the next week to rebut statements made. Mr. Gibson, it was interesting that he took time to again say that my criticism of the wastewater project conservation plan isn't correct, that the plan is going along fine and 80% of the community is been retrofitted, and you know the rest of them have to retrofit before connection to the wastewater project. That 80% is based partially on the ones that have been done, the ones that were replaced due to the retrofit upon sale ordinance, and a survey of the community. based on a survey of the community. And 80% leaves 20% that haven't been retrofitted. I believe it's a little more than that, but let's say that's the number. There's almost mental water savings, and it'd be better to save the staff time. So again, I thank you, Mr. Meacham. It's a tool in the toolbox. The basin plan he talks about isn't even remotely funded yet. The CSD is putting an item on their agenda this week about a water rate increase, which will allow that funding, but that money won't be available for a long period of time.
Thank you, Mr. Markinson. Mr. Brown, followed by Julie Tacker.
Mike Brown, representing CoLab. Last week at Agenda Item 2, you sent the water anti-exportation ordinance off agenda with no date or time certain. And it's surprising because prior to that, in the fall, you were all righteously talking about, oh, we'll forestall any concerns about the possibility that a future water district or backers or whatever could export water by passing an anti-water exportation ordinance. And then all of a sudden, last week, the thing is sent to the woods with the justification that the purveyors didn't like it. Of course, the leading purveyor which didn't like it was the city of Paso Robles. And then it was stated that if, well, it's prudent to wait to work on this till we understand the meaning of SB 1168. Well, if that's true, why wouldn't it be prudent to wait on the application to LAFCO for the water district till you understand the meaning of SB 1168, since SB 1168 is specifically about water management districts, not anti-exportation ordinance. So the real question is, why were you so swiftly responsive to that concern? And then it was stated that there's really no way to export water outside the county. The conveyances don't exist, and so forth, which is actually not true. The Central Coast Aqueduct transits the Paso Basin, as you know. You could certainly put both groundwater, NASI water, into that aqueduct, especially if the state doesn't have the water to transmit to you. When it has the capacity, it could be sent to its terminus at Lake Kachuma, and thence to the Santa Barbara County south coast, where there's over 200,000 desperate people that don't know what to do about water. So that conveyance exists as well. So the question here is, why all of a sudden has this been sent to the woods?
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Ms. Tacker, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning. I'm Julie Tacker, and I wanted to cover a couple of subjects, and the first one was purview. And Mr. Meacham just brought up CIF championships and football and Bearcats. I love when we talk about our kids in this community, but it's not in the purview of the board, if you want to stick to the purview of the board. But I still want to hear it, and I think everyone here enjoys that lighthearted conversation. When we have heard about things that might be on the edge of purview, one of the subjects recently was discussions about the city of Arroyo Grande. This week, the Los Angeles Times reported on the political winds changing in Arroyo Grande, and they pointed out that over the months of contentious nature, that San Luis Obispo County sheriffs were in their city council meetings in order to provide order for those meetings. That takes this county supervisor's purview into those chambers. So to ever interrupt a speaker, Mr. Gibson, they're going to get there. They're going to get to your purview. whether it be way out there with CIF championship football or right in the hallowed halls of City Hall in Arroyo Grande. It's going to get there. A lot of discussion about electioneering and what can and should or shouldn't be said in these chambers. You just certified an election. You five just certified an election. And we all participated. And your county clerk recorder thanked us for voting. Thanked us. That, too, is in your purview. When someone comes to this podium and speaks about a candidate, it's in your purview.
An export of groundwater is sort of tantamount to a denial of the ordinance without a public hearing to ascertain whether the public wanted it or not. Now, I can understand it if you had actually followed through with what you said the purpose was. The purpose apparently was that, as written, it didn't get it right. And so agendizing an item at which there wouldn't be approval, but there would be direction given to staff on how to get it right so it could be re-agendized for approval, would be a constructive way to deal with that. As it is, there was just this very vague discussion of they didn't get it right, and then some sort of magical thinking that by maybe bringing it back at some future date unknown, it would somehow be right just automatically on its own. But what does staff have to go on during that intervening time to get it right if it needs to be gotten right? So I would ask you at least take the step of setting a hearing at which direction will be given to staff on what to do with it, and then it can come back at a date certain when staff can do that work and you can either approve it or deny it. Couple of other things. First of all, I understand next week the Santa Margarita Ranch is going to have completed its long journey through the court system and be back to you for some kind of work related to implementing court decisions. And I would just ask that when you're looking at it, you be thinking in the backs of your minds about the many issues raised by our agricultural cluster ordinance and our what is the purpose of agricultural clusters, and has it departed from the original stated purposes, such elements as originally it was to contain development on antiquated parcels by moving it into more suitable locations, and yet as written, the ordinance allows the creation of imaginary parcels based on agricultural land uses. Anyway, there's a whole set of issues to look at when you're looking at one particular example. Final 11 seconds, I will mention that there are monks doing a vigil right now at the gate of Diablo Canyon. They will be on the courthouse lawn later this week, Friday and Saturday. If you want to know why they're keeping a vigil, you have a chance to ask them.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. DeFada, followed by Greg Graywell.
Good morning. I am Ben DeFada from Los Osos. All good comments by the speakers. I'm commenting on your yes vote to give in the excess $2.4 million taxpayers' hard-earned money to county employees to compensate them for insurance increases. For that matter, many others' health insurance rates have been increased as well as mine, that increased almost three times of what it was before Obamacare. In Los Osos, a lot of people don't have health insurance. They have to rent bedrooms because they can't afford to rent a house or an apartment because of this county's attitude to spend, spend, and spend. I find it true of what many people in Los Osos say, that you, Mr. Chairman, the Los Osos CSD, and general manager, don't listen to their constituents, where many every month need to spend their money sparingly and wisely or end up eating cat food towards the end of the month. You still don't listen. We all know that all department budgets aim on the high side, so why not give excess funds back to the taxpayers? Use it for next year's budget, or better still, give it to the homeless shelter department. Didn't this last election teach you supervisors anything? Well, down in Rio Grande, you haven't seen anything yet. More things are going to come out. Power attracts the worst and corrupts the best, and I thank you for today.
Mr. Graywall.
Thank you. I also want to talk about the fact that the no export clause was taken off the agenda. We've spent a lot of time on the Paso Robles Groundwater Advisory Committee in response to that, and nobody there liked it. They really didn't like the fact that you guys were carving out your own little place on there where you could still export and your contractors could still export, but nobody else could export. There's trucks been running since summertime from Crescent to Cambria hauling water. I'd like to know how the moratorium, the timeout, how that worked. Why isn't there, if this isn't legal, if you can't come up with a determination on how to write this thing properly so it basically doesn't let people export water from one community to another unless there's some drastic emergency, then of how we want this thing written so it basically doesn't let people export water, it's no different than if I got a cow standing in the field and somebody keeps coming and taking the milk. And then when I want to go out there and get the milk, there's no milk left in the cow. I want my water left in my area. If they planted improperly, built improperly, expanded too large, and they don't have enough resources, don't take it from me so that we have a problem along with you later on. Fix your problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graywall. That was our last request to speak, so I'll close public comment and bring it back to the board. Mr. Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to respond to a couple of the comments relative to the exportation ordinance. The reason why it did not get it right, if you will, if you looked at the staff report and you looked at all the attached letters, there were several different suggestions about how to make it better. And I think what the direction has been is to take it back to those that have made those submittals and find out how we could make it better. At some point, it will come back to the board. But as everybody always wants is to get public input on something like that, that's what we're trying to do, is to get that, get it right from the folks that are going to be most affected by it. And then it'll come back.
Thank you, Mr. Meacham. Ms. Arnold?
I wanted to speak on that, too. The things that the public has said, I'm hoping, I mean, the staff spent so much time writing up the ordinance that it was really the second time that we've had public discussion on it, and many of the constituents in the unincorporated area were anxiously awaiting for the hearing. People in the basin are being denied the use of their property to protect the groundwater, and to me, an exportation ordinance is an insurance policy. Ordinances can be changed, they can be amended, but I think it's really important that we, because this ordinance, at least in its second form, we've seen it once, we gave direction, staff's bringing back that direction, we could give more direction and send it back and forth, but I don't want to set it aside. I think it's too important, and I think we should give staff direction to set a hearing date in the first quarter of the coming year so that we know it's coming back and it can go out to more public, for more public comment in that time. But just the hearing itself doesn't mean we're voting on anything. We're just having more discussion and debate and furthering the progress of that insurance policy. So I would like to ask staff to help me, and so that we can today give staff direction to bring that ordinance back for a hearing in the first quarter of the coming year.
Well, I defer to council or the planning staff or public works staff. We have given staff direction to go out, work on the ordinance, and bring it back. You know, we'll await some word from staff as to when they think that's appropriate. I don't know that there's anything more to do than that unless staff has some thoughts. Okay, so we will working with supervisors of the affected area, be happy to consider that item for the agenda when it is ready to go. All right. Anything else? With that, then, we'll ask Madam Clerk to introduce our next item, please.
Item number 18, request to 1, authorize the Director of Public Works to execute sub-grant agreements for State of California Department of Water Resources, Integrated Regional Water Management Program grants, and execute reimbursement agreements and amendments with participating agencies. 2, authorize associated budget adjustments to distribute $6,323,610 in grant funds and commit $715,070 in matching funds. 3, approve the Santa Margarita CSA 23 Atascadero Mutual Water Company Garden Farms Emergency Intertie Project. And 4, adopt an addendum to the final Massamano Water Project Environmental Impact Report pursuant to Section 21000 of the California Public Resources Code, CEQA, all districts.
Very good. Mr. Hutchinson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm Mark Hutchinson, Deputy Director, Department of Public Works. I have with me Carolyn Berg, engineer in our utilities department, who is responsible for all things integrated regional water management, including the IRWM drought grant program that we're talking with you about this morning. Carolyn.
Good morning, supervisors.
Ms. Berg.
Let me click forward somehow. Sorry about that. I am going to let Mark take over. There we go. Okay. There we go. Sorry about that. So good morning, supervisors. Mark and I will be talking to you today about the Integrated Regional Water Management Drought Grant Funding and staff's recommendations and the various options available to you. So as a reminder, to authorize the Director of Public Works to proceed with our grant agreements with the state for this funding and under the grant allocations that we're recommending today or as your board sees fit. And Mark will go through those options in a moment. And the other is to authorize the Director of Public Works to execute sub-grant agreements. And the reason we do this is to ensure that we transfer liability in terms and conditions of these state grant agreements to our project sponsors like Cambria CSD and others. So with that, I'll hand it over to Mark.
Members of the board, as you can see on the overhead, we've got some strikeout and underline in the first recommendation because the community of San Simeon has formally withdrawn from the grant program. I do have a letter here. I'll hand to the clerk, and she can pass those down. They were unable to move forward for a number of reasons, but in response, we had to shift our recommendation to option one that is shown in attachment two of your staff report, which we'll put up on the board momentarily. In our conversations with the San Simeon Community Services District, they have had some issues with end-user agreements related to their project to pipe recycled water into motel laundry rooms. Some late-minute issues have come up. They've also, their board has expressed concerns about the need to do interim financing. That's the situation where in these grant programs, the state acts on a reimbursement basis. So it's up to the individual agency to pay their costs, their contractors and construction costs, and then submit for reimbursement back to the state. That can, sometimes be a long process. We've seen as much as a year for the state to process invoices, and the CSD felt that this wasn't the right time for them to carry that short-term financing for, in this case, an amount in excess of $2 million. They also have identified some projects since they first applied for this grant that they believe are a higher priority and have indicated that they would like to pursue those instead. So consequently, our recommendation is to distribute the grant funds as shown on the slide that we're looking at now. Essentially what we've done is removed projects 4 and 5, San Simeon's withdrawn, and project 5, the CMC Intertie, was the lowest scoring project for the Regional Water Management Group. This allows the top three projects based on the scoring to maintain their full funding and guarantee that those projects can in fact move ahead. We've talked a little bit about San Simeon. I just want to pause on the CMC Intertie. As you know, in our previous discussions about dealing with the ongoing drought, our plan B for CMC remains the same, or for the Chorro Valley, which is to provide district state water this coming next year to keep the operations whole out there, minus the amount from conservation. We also believe that if the drought were to continue in years 2 and 3, beyond this year, that the city of San Luis Obispo is prepared to work with us on an exchange of Nasu Mena water for Whale Rock, which would also require some additional agreements with CMC to treat Whale Rock water and supply the needs in the Chorro Valley, again, at conservation levels. At the same time, because we've been developing, working with the Chorro Valley institutions, the state agencies that are there in Cuesta College, we would propose to gather that group together and continue working on longer-term solutions for water security and drought resiliency in the Chorro Valley, which we would report back to your board as those talks progress. But we believe that there will also be further grant opportunities from the recently passed Prop 1. We'd like to work with those public agencies out there to develop either an intertie or some other water wheeling agreements that would allow us to continue those vital public institutions operating through drought periods. Let's see where we're at. Oops. So recommendation number 2 in your staff report concerns the intertie between Tascadero Mutual Water Company and Santa Margarita CSA 23, focusing on the CEQA requirements. We did prepare an addendum to the Nacimiento EIR. The pipeline that is proposed to be built was identified in the Nacimiento EIR underneath the raw water option for that community. It simply involves connecting Atascadero Mutual down to CSA 23 so that potable water could be delivered via the Atascadero system. And that addendum is in the clerk's file. It's been reviewed and approved and recommended by the environmental coordinator. And also a series of budget adjustments. These allow us to accept the grant money into the flood control district budget, pass through a certain amount of money as shown to Heritage Ranch and the Cambria CSD, appropriate a portion of that match. The number that's been floated out is about 70%. If that was rejected by the voters, then it becomes a flood control district reserve liability, as we've put into the staff report, up to but probably somewhat short of that $715,000. This is just a revision of the complicated flow chart that's in your board packet, but it simply shows the three district-sponsored projects on the left, or efforts. One is the grant administration costs. We have the CMC intertie project, which we're recommending no funding at this time, and then CSA 23. And on the right of the chart, that we fund the Heritage Ranch Nacimiento connection, and then the Cambria CSD's brackish water desal plant at an amount slightly above their initial request.
Right.
That concludes our report.
All right. Mr. Meacher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark, regarding Prop 1, are we positioning ourselves in any way for any recyclable projects out there for recycled water of any kind?
We have just completed, as a result of a Prop 84 planning grant, a recycled water management plan, that's the title for it, for the county. One of the top projects there concerns the South County Sanitation District plant, as well as Pismo Beach plant. And Pismo Beach is moving forward, has laid the groundwork for a recycled water line, working potentially with some of the oil companies for abandoned pipelines to move recycled water from their plant and replace, at this point in time, to replace municipal irrigation in public spaces with recycled water. So that is moving forward. We expect, depending on the Prop 1 requirements and whatnot, that we would approach Morro Bay through the IRWM process and see if we couldn't also assist with getting them hooked up with some grant money there as well.
Thank you. And I don't know how all the grants work, how all the applications have to be made, but I'm hoping that the board in the next year focuses strongly on infrastructure needs out there to provide for things like this. So, thank you.
Ms. Ray?
Mark, can you, kind of on that same idea, with the Chorro Valley Intertie, we talked a little bit about how that project couldn't be properly scoped and that it might potentially make us ineligible for future grant money. Can you kind of talk about that just a little bit so that the public understands? I mean, that was a high priority thing, and now all of a sudden it's at the bottom. So maybe we can expand what the longer term approach to solving that problem, in addition to what you said in the staff report.
Well, initially the project had really two components to it. One is an interconnect between the Nacimiento line and the Salinas line, both of which exist, pass through the Cuesta Grade and come down the hill to the city of San Luis Obispo's water treatment plant. The idea of connecting Nacimiento to Salinas was to take advantage of an existing pipeline that tees off the Salinas line and goes about halfway to the California Men's Colony water treatment plant. So the second phase of the project was to extend that pipeline all the way over to the treatment plant and then make probably Nacimiento water or an exchange with Salinas water available on an emergency basis only to the Chorro Valley to offset any losses of state water. We obviously, if that project was moving forward, we were aware it would not be built until about this time next year with contracting requirements and whatnot. So we had planned for next year to use district carryover state water to make up the loss. The district owns state water that is stored in San Luis Reservoir and about 650 acre feet currently stored in Lopez water or Lopez Reservoir for the benefit of those state water customers in the South County. What we're looking at now is, and then as we talked about doing that crossover, working with the city of San Luis Obispo, they suggested that from an operational standpoint, it would make things simpler if instead of putting the Nacimiento water into the CMC system, we simply exchanged Nacimiento water with the city or a portion of the city's well rock water. That way the two water treatment plants aren't treating mixed water, if you will. There's a constant inflow and a constant water quality. Looking at amounts in storage and well rock, we estimate probably 2 years with no additional inflow. So that's kind of the worst case thing. As this came along and we looked at the grant money, it became apparent that none of the other projects would be nearly as effective. In fact, CSA 23 Intertie couldn't be built with just half the money. So it made sense, and there is an immediate need for those projects to move forward with the immediate need project. So back to the Chorro Valley. For a number of reasons, we've developed good lines of communication with the agencies out there, understand better some of their needs and complications.
We solve their water reliability problems there. But I would like to explore a couple of things. One of them is it seems like your worst-case scenario here would be that the state water system does not operate next year, despite whatever's happening out there today, that it could well be that the state water system does not deliver any water at all. Is our carryover water then stranded in San Luis Reservoir?
There's certainly that potential. That is the outside worst-case scenario. The state has been posed the question directly at the state water contractors meeting last month, whether or not they would operate the system to deliver the carryover water. DWR did not make any commitments at that time.
Okay.
However, we're prepared to point out that the major water user in the Chorro Valley is a major state institution. So we're not trying to play some sort of brinksmanship game, but it does beg the question as exactly how the state is going to work with us to solve what is primarily their problem.
Right. And so it's a huge piece of infrastructure to be operated for one prison in this county, you know, a questionable proposition perhaps, but backing up that outside worst-case scenario would be the use of whale rock water, which you're convinced we have a two-year supply. We have two dry seasons that were supposed to be rainy, and we would still have water to supply those institutions?
That water belongs to CMC and the city of San Luis Obispo, so we would have to make agreements with both of those entities. And the idea would be that, assuming the Nacimiento project is up and running by April 1st, which is our self-imposed deadline, we would be able to make up any difference in water with that supply.
And I'm accepting of the idea that we have options to take care of water reliability in the Chorro Valley, but it's your considered opinion there's nothing within these IRWM grant funds we're considering today that can or should be used to make sure that those options are more widely considered.
I've had some long conversations with Carolyn to my left, who has some experience with this and is our recognized expert. We do have a concern that if we were to build, say, the interconnect portion with grants, the state typically views that as phase one of a project and has made it clear that they will not fund future projects or future phases of a project that has money in one of the earlier phases. I understand the idea trying to manage the grant funds, but the practicality of that is something we frown about, but that is what it is.
Okay, so the short answer to that is no, it doesn't look like these funds can or should go there. Last thing as regards this this particular project, while you have the microphone, we've heard from Mr. Greening repeatedly his concerns regarding the environmental determination as to this project in general, using some other source of water in the Chorro Valley. I might generalize that. Can you speak? Apparently you have addressed these concerns on more than one occasion. Can you speak to the environmental determination that would need to be made for this project?
There is a draft negative declaration that's been circulated and comments have been received. There seems to be I won't say a misunderstanding of project, a redefinition of the project, that this is somehow a permanent connection that would then deliver a significant amount of water to Chorro Valley on a regular basis. As defined in the environmental document, it clearly is not. The connection and the environmental document evaluated an emergency use of likely Nacimiento water or some portion of it through the interconnect and over to the Chorro Valley to carry the institutions through the drought period when state water is not delivering a full amount. There's no clearance, no intention, no description to have a permanent source of water, you know, on a regular basis to make the agency's regular customers. That being said, the California Military Department is in the Nacimiento EIR for about 200 acre-feet of water, so that's already been addressed. If the pipeline were in place and then later a project was developed to make it an ongoing regular customer, that would require additional review and additional analysis of the impact.
The project that is being considered in some fashion or another is some set of infrastructure and the operation of that infrastructure as only an emergency drought-related project.
Yes, because that goes to the impacts on the other end of the pipe.
All right. Ms. Arnold?
Yep. I just wanted to say good job to our county public works staff. We all saw the map again today. The entire state, almost the entire state, is in extreme drought level. And to compete at the state level for grants and be able to win them is really a great accomplishment under these circumstances. So I know it was was difficult, and you had the $12 million that you thought we had, and then it was denied, and then just scrapped.
But the problem here is that there is no clear definition in it of what would constitute an emergency or the duration of said emergency. In an environment of climate change, there might be a long-term failure of the state water project, which would be an emergency and would be tantamount to a long-term, quote-unquote, solution. And without a clear definition of under what circumstances an emergency would be declared, whether there's any limitation on the duration thereof, and who would be affected by the ability of moving water from one point to another, there would be a loser at one end and a gainer at the other end, or multiple losers and multiple gainers. And it was quite simply defective in that under the category of would cause the movement of water from one place to another, it didn't even rise to the level of class 2, much less class 1. So I still think that negative declaration is not usable, absent considerable revision that would define an emergency in a much more precise way, would define the decision-making protocols for who would define the emergency, etc. That said, I would like to think that this new stakeholders group that would convene all of the interests in the Chorro Valley, number one, would include the purveyors from the North County that would be sacrificed in the event of any movement of water from one place to another. And number two, that they would embark on a more studied alternatives analysis that would come up with more than that one alternative. And if that one alternative remains viable, would better define it, would better characterize it, would better characterize the nature and duration of any emergency under which it would be activated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. Belford.
Well, I heartily agree with Eric. I'm really worried about this on the intertie, especially when you connect the circle here. Last week you said you threw out the no exportation. Here you're talking about an intertie that will feed the water to the Chorro Creek, the Chorro Reservoir, through CMC treatment, and deliver to Chorro Valley users in an emergency situation without emergency being defined. Now, that, and then from Nacimiento to the city of San Luis for Rail Rock and then a Whale Rock swap. Now, that to me says you're taking water out of North County, emergency situations, when in North County regularly gets up to 100, 110, and we need the water, but you want to bring it here. You're talking about bringing it over to Whale Rock. That comes from us. You've also declared a moratorium on it. Well, see, when the heat comes, whether you realize it or not, it's the North County that's in trouble, not the coast. You guys get 74, you get nice cool evenings, but we cook. And you say there is no way to pump the water out. Well, once you do that intertie, amazing thing. That intertie and one section of pipe will get you all the way to Cambria for their water problems because you pump it to into the Whale Rock and Whale Rock to Cambria. And it also goes to Los Osos. But I understand one of our supervisors for that district actually promised Los Osos they'd be getting water from Nacimiento over 3 years ago. Not promised, but told them they would be coming. And yet, that was never said, and yet with this intertie, there it is. Isn't that amazing? Mr. Gibson, you can read the future. You promised them water from Nacimiento. This, when you look at a map, and I'm sure CoLab can provide it with you, once you do that in one pump station, you have the whole county wired to ship water from the North County. The North County better figure out what birth control is because it's about to get raped for its water. That's what you're planning here. Deceitful, underhanded, and that's why I call it Machiavellian. That's why you, Mr. Gibson, when I asked what is your ultimate plan, couldn't come up with it because you couldn't let the word out. You have figured out how to move Nacimiento water all the way to Kern County, all the way to Cambria, and now south, all by one intertie and one pumping station.
Thank you, Mr. Pelfrey, for some very interesting baseless speculation. Those were our only requests to speak, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board. Supervisor Arnold, do you have a motion?
I sure do. So my motion would be to approve staff recommendation.
Great hue and cry for a break. We'll ask Madam Clerk to introduce the next item.
Item number 19, a hearing to consider a request by the County of San Luis Obispo for amendments to Title 29 Affordable Housing Fund to consider resolutions adopting an annual adjustment of the residential in-lieu fee and commercial housing impact fee schedules and approve the annual report and action plan for year 2015 pursuant to Title 29, all districts.
Thank you. Mr. Bergman.
Good afternoon, Chair Gibson, board members. We have Mr. Lilly and Mr. Bench and Mr. Keith here to talk to you about annual adjustments to residential in-lieu fees based on construction cost, also to discuss the existing five-year phase-in of in-lieu fees, and to consider and approve the annual report and action plan for the year 2015. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Lilly, if that's okay.
Mr. Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dana Lilly with your planning staff. Ted Bench will be making the presentation today. I think you may know we had found an error in part of the package. Ted will describe that later in his presentation, and I think you've individually been briefed on it. And with no more ado, Mr. Bench.
Thank you. Thank you, Dana. Good morning, Board. This is Ted Bench with County Planning. Dana mentioned a minor error in the staff recommendations. It has to do with which project staff suggests the Title 29 funding go to. And I have handouts for the public that I put outside the chambers and over here near the front of the chambers, and hopefully you also have the same handout. So today we're talking about Title 29, the annual reports and fee adjustments. And first I'll start with the annual report, which also includes the action plan. So the annual report is about how did we spend the Title 29 money? This is money that we collect from in-lieu fees that are collected at the time building permits are issued by the planning department. And last year we had a little over $57,000 that we spent on three projects, three affordable housing projects. And they're on this, those three projects are on the screen right now. It shows the name of the project and the, what the money was spent on. Oak Park Phase 1, the money went to pay for roofs, doors, cabinets, so on and so on. This year we have more money, in part because we collected the same amount of in-lieu fees. There's a little of unspent money. All of this is on the screen. But the largest chunk of money, $88,000, is coming from paid-off loans from affordable housing units. So whereas last year we had roughly about, we spent about $57,000, this year we have $155,000 of Title 29 funds that we can spend on affordable housing projects. But staff suggests that you save some of that money. Say that $88,000 of it was from loans that were paid off. Perhaps half of that loan payoff money should be saved for next year, because perhaps there will be a project that will start in South County or elsewhere. South County is the only area this year that staff is not recommending that Title 29 money go to, because we don't have a project in South County that we can spend, an affordable housing project that we can spend Title 29 funds on. Anyway, of the $155,000 that's available, staff recommends that we save about $48,000 and spend $106,000. Again, that money must be used to pay for construction of new affordable housing units, and the money should be spent in the area where the in-lieu fees came from. On the screen is a chart that shows a breakdown by area in the county, and it shows the money that's available in each of those areas. North County has roughly $19,000. San Luis Obispo, Central County area, roughly $33,000. South County, about $6,000 of in-lieu fees came from South County, but there's not an affordable housing project this year that we could spend the money towards. North Coast had $6,000 last year, almost $7,000, that we didn't have a project we could spend the money on. But this year, we do have a project in North Coast. It's a senior an apartment project that's going to be built in San Luis Obispo, a South Street family apartment that's being built by the Housing Authority. They'll break ground next month. And the $46,000 to the Morro Bay Senior Apartment Project I was describing earlier. The as Dana mentioned a little while ago, there was a we noticed an error in the both the staff report and the action plan that was attached to the staff report. It had a slightly different list of affordable housing projects that we suggested that the this year's funds go to. So on the screen right now is the corrected list of affordable housing projects along with the dollar amount. As I noticed here, I've only shown the North County projects, and that's because that's the only area where we recommended a change in the projects, and the dollar amount is the same. It's $19,337,000, but instead of all going to one project, we suggested it be divided among two projects in Atascadero that are being managed by People's Self-Help. And the resolution that was passed out to the public and to your board that's signed by County Council reflects the new list of affordable housing projects. So now I'd like to talk about the annual fee adjustments, and I'll try to run through that fairly quickly. So we're talking about Title 29 fees that are collected with building permits. We're like to call them in-lieu fees, or for commercial development, housing impact fees. We started collecting in-lieu fees in 2009, and we were expecting to do a five-year phase-in period so that we weren't collecting the full amount of in-lieu fees that we could collect that are actually supported by our Nexus studies. We decided to gradually phase in those fees over 5 years, and as you know, today we are still in year one of a five-year phasing plan. So what's on the screen right now is a chart that shows you what the full, what we collect at the counter right now. We are not collecting the five-year full fee, say for a residential project. We're not collecting $3.57 a square foot. We're actually collecting what we call year one fees, which is 20% of the allowable fee. So we're only collecting 71 cents a square foot of in-lieu fees for a residential project. What staff does suggest is that we stay at year one, but that we increase it with the annual construction cost increase that are tracked by the Construction Cost Index of San Francisco that's prepared by the technical publication. They show us that the construction cost increased about 4.5% year over year. And although we recommend that the fee stay at year one, we suggest that the fees still be updated incrementally just so that they keep up with the actual construction cost that goes on out there in the field. So to sum it up, with the annual fee adjustments, staff recommend that we stay at year one. And the reason for that is that we noticed when we look back on our permit issuance record, the number of building permits that were issued over the past 5 years. It was only 2 years ago that we hit the lowest spot on our charts. In other words, we saw a 10-year decline in number of building permits that were issued that has only turned around 2 years ago in 2011-2012. So staff suggests that we keep the in-lieu fees at year one long enough to be sure that we actually are seeing a stabilization of the number of building permits that are issued by the county. But again, stay at year one, but add that 4.5% construction cost increase. So to sum up staff presentation, the recommended action from our staff to your board is that the board adopt the resolution that was handed out earlier that shows the new action plan, the new list of affordable housing projects to spend the Title 29 fees on for the coming year, and that the board also adopt.
That's correct. Okay. Other questions from the board? Seeing none, I'll open it to the public. I have one request to speak. Mr. Brown?
Mike Brown representing CoLab. I think this is the fourth year we've commented on this. We think you ought to not raise this fee now, and secondly, that you should direct staff to bring the ordinance amendments back to abolish the program. This is simply a program that represents the failure of the architecture of land use regulation in the state and the county, because it's made the construction of homes so expensive that builders are incented to build the most expensive house that they can, because in order to get the entitlements and go through all the process, it's the same thing. So if you're building a subdivision of $5 million homes or a subdivision of five $200,000 homes, you have the same set of problems. So then the state passes the enabling legislation that lets cities and counties choose this program. You don't have to do it. Not all jurisdictions in the state do it. And then you, in effect, say, you know, we're going to charge the home builder more, who's going to pass it through most likely to the ultimate consumer of the house, and then we're in turn going to give the money to a nonprofit housing corp or a housing authority. So it's simply a wealth transfer from the consumer of the market house to somebody else. And it only pertains to the home building industry. You know, if you wanted to have a tax, tax everybody to provide affordable housing, and see if the voters want to vote for that in an election with two-thirds of the vote. The program doesn't work. Your own statistics in the report, Table 6 for 2014, show that they used $57,000. It was applied to 93 affordable units, $619.40 a unit. I pretty much would guess that to administer the program, prepare this report, keep track of the money, and do all the stuff costs a lot more than that $57,000 that was applied. You ought to get rid of this. You ought to be for capitalism, free market, and get serious about what you could do to stimulate workforce housing and other housing by expanding the opportunities and places where you could build it and lessening the regulations, costs, and interference on building it.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. That was our only request to speak, so we'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board. I do have Supervisor Ray's lights on, a light on. I would like to also make some comments on this.
Well, I wanted to just almost piggyback what Mr. Brown was just saying about his last comment and saying getting serious about workforce housing. This board has gotten serious about workforce housing, and especially with regard to the ad hoc workforce housing committee that Supervisor Meacham and I have been working on with Mr. Lilly. And with the two of us leaving that committee, I thought it might be a good time to bring it to the board's attention that we've done significant work on the workforce housing component of this, and specifically with doing exactly what Mr. Brown was talking about, which is revamping our codes and our ordinances so that we can get out of the way and allow workforce housing to happen via the market. And so, again, I want to bring to this board's attention that two of the big players and big pushers on this committee are not going to be here come January, and it might be a good time to have a discussion about how to move that forward.
Thank you, Ms. Ray. And, you know, and indeed, I'm glad to hear that some progress is being made about workforce housing. This the topic before us today is the even more challenging issue of affordable housing. And the information being presented to us regards our inclusionary housing ordinance, which opposition to which is well understood from certain quarters. You know, I was here in 2008 when we passed the inclusionary housing ordinance. It's right, you know, it was very clear that the home building community was not thrilled about it. It doesn't like to see cost added to units that it produces. And at the same time, they also understood that there was a reason that we were moving forward with this ordinance, which was to develop funds for, you know, for the construction, for the actualization of affordable housing. That still brings in a paltry sum to try to work on a big problem in this county. And the failure of this program that Mr. Brown is prone to point out is self-fulfilling. We can't do much because we cannot accumulate enough money to have a significant impact. Our housing in lieu fees, which are the usually preferred approach of builders to get these kinds of things done, were calculated and gauged to actually produce affordable units. It does not apply to individual single-family houses, and for many years, even as we have dealt with a very difficult economy, I have argued that we need to bump it off of year one. And so I'm going to renew that plea to my colleagues here. I do think we have to move forward with the construction cost index. Mr. Meacham's often fond of saying if we don't keep up with some of these cost increases, we're going to be presenting a big increase at some point, and that's really going to cause some sticker shock. But at 71 cents a square foot, right now, we're going to get nowhere with affordable housing, and I do not see that the addition of another 71 cents a square foot to move this into year two is going to significantly diminish the ability to produce units. So with that, in an effort to move this forward, I'm going to move staff's recommendation with the modification to go from year one to year two. That would be the housing construction cost index and the change from year one to year two. Do I have a second? Seeing no second, that motion dies. We'll carry on with conversation, and we'll go to Ms. Arnold.
Mm-hmm. So I appreciate all the work that everybody's done, and Mr. Bench's presentation, Oak Park Phase 1, Moylan Terrace Phase 2, and People's Self-Help, all good projects. We were able to contribute $57,000 to those cumulatively, to those projects. So I've seen those projects, and they clearly had a lot of other funding sources to be able to be built, and our $57,000 to contributed to a very small portion. So that being said, and knowing that the fees that we're discussing today have a threshold of two units or more, tells me that that is a lot. That would include a lot of the projects that are very small. Developers go out and try to, you know, one or two at a time, provide affordable housing out there, and they are subject then to these fees that we're discussing. I have come to the conclusion, right or wrong, I've come to the conclusion that we can do more to promote affordable housing by not increasing the in-lieu fees at all, but, you know, to help work with some of these worthwhile projects to be able to realize some of the grant funding and so forth that's out there. In other words, if our county staff was able to lend a helping hand in projects and enable them, similar to what we do with the water projects, we've achieved so much just being able to help bolster the staff of some of the organizations that go out and do receive grant money to provide affordable homes. But you know, I think about it, first-time home buyers, seniors, our workforce population, all the folks that are looking to affordable housing in this county, they're all experiencing the same thing we all are, increases in food, health care costs, sometimes fuel, sometimes not, but the cost of living increases. So to me, you know, again, I think promoting affordable housing, we have to look at a broader segment of our population, and I was hoping, and I'm asking this question, if we could separate this item to be able to separate 1, 2, and 3, 2 being approve the Title 29 Annual Report and Action Plan, where staff is recommending the almost double the amount of money you were able to spend last year to the projects that you've identified. I would approve of that, but I would like to separate item 1 and 2 in our staff recommendation box because I'm not I'm not inclined to approve any increase in lieu fees.
Mr. Meacham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is it's a difficult one, but I can remember clearly over the years from the hearing from the building industry, and I don't think anybody was really embracing this over time. And I have to comment on Supervisor Ray's point. I think that allowing us and another member of the board to continue working with, I'm going to have to suspend Mr. Lilly's retirement for a while. But,
I tried.
And working with the building industry a little further, they've come up with some pretty creative ideas about, as opposed to the fee structure, incentive packages.
This will probably continue to be, unfortunately, a nearly intractable problem about affordable housing in our community. This is a problem throughout the state. What is the best way to go about this? I know that there's, you know, philosophical opposition to the inclusionary programs, though the truth is that they have provided units and funds that have helped to make this make actual affordable housing happen. But it can't be in and of itself the only way to go about it. I'm interested in seeing what else can be done too. I have not seen anything. I have not been, you know, we have conversations, you know, reasonably periodically with home builders and such, and I haven't really come up, you know, it seems like the state would have come up with something too, since this is not a local problem but an entire state of California problem, how we're going to better solve this problem. We see in our county there's a variety of things that lead to the construction of housing that nobody can afford other than people who come to retire here or want second homes here. I don't know how we change that. It's not going to be changed through more fees. It's not going to be changed by getting rid of any fees. So, you know, I think I certainly would welcome some actual practical programs that we might be able to look at. But at this point, I think, you know, going with a rather conservative, you know, and we've heard this, you know, before, and I don't know when it is that it would be considered reasonable to advance it to the next year and the next year and the next year. I don't know what that looks like in terms of the economy. I do know that there's a lot of projects in process, and I also understand a lot of those projects in process are have difficulties coming in at the price that they want to for the consumers here that are most needed. So I would move that we do move the entire staff recommendation, including the keeping it at year one with the construction increase.
I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. Ray.
I have a discussion as well.
And continuing discussion, Ms. Ray?
Well, I wanted to kind of, maybe this is directed at you, Supervisor Meacham, but we've worked so hard, and I know that the other supervisors haven't been privy to what we've been working on, but and especially such big kudos to the industry and Dana Lilly and everybody else who've been working on these innovative ideas. But until we have those in place, this is what we have, and this needs to be a viable program. And if we don't do what amounts to a cost of living adjustment to the fee, then the fee over time becomes useless because it's not going to keep up with what little we actually can do. And it's extremely nominal when we're talking about 4 cents. And so I think that it's a way to bridge the gap right now while we try and still, or while, I should say while you, try and still continue to solve this problem, but keep this so that it's not sitting there languishing doing absolutely nothing. And over time that will happen with the cost of construction going up. And the cost of construction, for better or for worse, will continue to go up as the economy recovers, which we know. So we have to make this adjustment in order to keep this fund viable.
I agree. Ms. Arnold?
Yep. I was just going to ask the motion maker, Supervisor Hale, if he would consider an amendment to pull out number 2 so that approving Title 29 Annual Report and Action Plan could be voted on separately.
Sure.
I just wanted
she doesn't want to vote on the on the in lieu fees. She just wants to vote on the action plan.
Approved Title 29 Annual Report and Action Plan, meaning the staff's recommendation for spending the money.
So let me ask then the motion then becomes, if I understand Mr. Hill, to simply approve the adjustment to the in lieu fee, which was one of two staff's recommendations.
Yeah, I guess I will make in deference to Supervisor Arnold, and then I'll come back and make the motion again on the second one and third one. So I would move staff recommendation on the first item, which is the in lieu with the annual adjustment. Cost of living, and then we can come back and do the other ones, if that's what you're asking.
That is, except for, I'll have to ask staff, number three goes with number one. So I'm asking for number two to be taken separately.
Okay.
Motion is then staff's second recommendation one. One and three. Mr. Hill, one and three?
Sure.
Yeah, second points.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion on that motion? Mr. Meacham.
I wanted to respond to Supervisor Hill in terms of he hasn't seen anything, and I understand that, and I respect the fact that hasn't come forward at this particular point in time. But from what I understand, working with staff on this and Supervisor Ray, it's going to take a little time to craft whatever potential ordinances would be necessary to come before the board that would address this issue. And I don't know when that would...
Staff, I know this. Thank you, Mr. Lilly. As you complete... one of your last official appearances before us. We appreciate the very great work that you've done on all of this. Thank you. So with that, Madam Clerk, if you'll introduce our next item, please.
Item number 20, a hearing to consider an appeal of the South County Area 1 Road Improvement Fee by Mr. and Mrs. Larise, District 4.
Thank you. Mr. Honeycutt is going to give us a staff report. Mr. and Mr. Larise, once we hear from Mr. You just have a seat right there in the front row. We'll hear from Mr. Honeycutt, and we'll give you then a chance to present your comments.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Supervisors. My name is Frank Honeycutt. I'm with County Public Works. This item is on an appeal to pay the fee in the South County Area 1. Appellant is Mr. and Mrs. Larise. The project is located there in along Don Road, just south of Black Lake, and north and east of the Woodlands. Their proposed project is to build a home. According to the permit application, it's a smaller manufactured home on pier foundation. They're also asking to grade a pad for that home, put in a driveway and a septic system. The fee involved for that is just over $12,000 to cover cumulative traffic impacts in the area. The Title 13 of the County Code allows for the applicants to appeal the fee if they can demonstrate that there is no reasonable nexus between the amount of traffic generated or the fee related to the traffic generated. I tried to paraphrase. I may have gotten it pretty close to what their letter of appeal says, but they believe that their home won't generate as much traffic per se as another home. Our fee is based on the ITE trip manual as the code requires. Over the years, we've noted that typically a home generates about 10 trips each day, with one of those trips occurring during the peak hour. That seems to follow through regardless of whether it's a big home, a small home, or a rich home, or a more affordable home. Therefore, we would still call for one peak hour trip or one regular housing fee. Also, appellant's point number two is that if they pay that fee, which is $12,011, they might not be able to move forward with their project. As I've stated before and in the past, this fee represents their fair share burden to cover the cost of road improvements of $12,000 per home or one peak hour trip over the history of this fee. I don't know what to do about that. Over the history of this fee, we can see that there have been 32 appeals filed over the years. Majority of them have been denied. The ones that have been adjusted or waived represent a loss to the program of just short of $160,000. And with that, staff's recommendation is to deny the appeal to waive the road improvement fee. And I'd be happy to answer any questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. Honeycutt. Any questions from the board? Seeing none, Mr. and Mrs. Lurice, welcome. Please correct my likely mispronunciation of your last name.
Right.
And as this is an appeal hearing, we traditionally will offer you 10 minutes to present whatever information you'd like us to consider.
First of all, good morning, and I am so nervous that I don't know what I'm going to say. but, you know, basically that's it. We don't have the money to do it. We just we bought this property about 11, 12 years ago, and there was another mobile home there. And we thought that it had permits. We came to the county, and they told us we did have permits. But then years later, it did not have permit. The person that owned this property before apparently had moved the mobile home to another property, which was CS2, and took the same permit. So we ended up losing the mobile home ourselves.
Open it to the public, but seeing no one coming forward, I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board. Again, we're going to bring it back for deliberation here unless there's anything that as you sit comfortably there you have thought you might like to add. And so seeing you nod no, we'll bring it back to the board for deliberation. Ms. Ray?
Well, sorry, I didn't push the wrong button. As a supervisor of the district, that's why I'm going first on this. These are so hard. And we've seen a couple of them even just in the short time that I've been here, and I want to tell you that your request is not heard without feeling here. But I'll have to preface that by saying that we have findings that we have to make in order to be able to exempt the fee, and unfortunately that I can't afford it isn't one of those findings. It doesn't meet those findings. And you described it perfectly when you said it's 3 to 5 people, 2 cars. If 2 of those people are adults with the 2 cars and they're going to work, so that's going to generate 4 trips total on both of those. That's how you end up at plus going to the store and picking up a kid from school. That's how you end up with the 10 trips per day calculation. And so as you're expressing it, it really does fit exactly what the norms are shown from the public works. And so to make the finding to be able to get rid of the fee, I don't know that it's there. But what I would suggest is that I'm certain that we appreciate coming here and being so nervous to even ask the question. And I don't think that you should be penalized for asking the question. So my plea to the board would be to waive the appellant's fee of $513, but to deny the appeal.
So your motion is to deny the appeal and waive the fee?
I guess I wasn't really ready to make a motion yet, but I suppose, and if someone will second, if there's more discussion to be had. Yes.
So we do have that motion with Mr. Hill's second and Mr. Meacham with his light on.
Thank you. I want to make sure I understand, Frank. There was a mobile home there before theirs?
Unfortunately, this is the first time hearing of any prior home on there. Regardless of what action you take, I was planning to talk to these people to find out more. If there was a home there before and that home was generating traffic like homes do, there would not be reason for a fee today.
That's what I was wondering, because if there was something there prior, then there is not any acceleration of traffic at this particular point in time. But when they mentioned something about the permits, if there was a mobile home there before, they have had to get a permit from PG&E to hook up power. So there's somewhere along the line, there's got to be records of that.
Which would also be part of my questioning. Was it there? When did it get there? Did it pay a fee? Before the fee and all that?
Then in that case, Len, I'll withdraw my motion and let's continue it until
until you are able to sit down and find that out.
Okay. I would second that motion.
Well, the motion is withdrawn. The second concurs.
Sure.
I guess the other thing that I heard in there was the possibility that that mobile home moved, and so the history of, if there can be documented a mobile home on that parcel, the history of that, I think, needs to be explored in
as well. And I could point out when that kind of thing happens, you don't get to move. We'll just say you don't get to move the fee with you.
Right.
So if they built or relocated to a place that requires a fee, then they would have to.
So we just check yeah. that out. How long do you think, and just in terms of going to a date certain, how long would you need to work on this?
Not very long at all.
Could we continue this to the 16th, 2 weeks hence?
We could do that. yes, yeah, we can do that.
Now, real quickly, if that mobile home that was maybe even misrepresented as to what they purchased, if they never got permits, then where does that leave us?
Well, then that would depend. If the, well, just regardless of the permit, if the traffic generator was there before this fee program began in 91, then it would have been accounted for already. So it would still be existing traffic. However, if they came in after the program started, say middle or late 90s, they didn't get a permit, and they didn't pay a fee, then the fee was never paid. It would have to be paid at this time.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So, motion to continue to?
December 16th.
December 16th. We have a second.
Is that okay? Is that date okay with you? Are you going to be able to come? Are you going to be on vacation?
No, it's fine.
Okay.
Two weeks from today. So, we have two Tuesdays in. So, we have a motion to continue to the 16th. All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed, none. We'll see you back here in a couple of weeks, Mr. and Ms. Lurie's. All right. I think we have one more piece of business, Madam Clerk.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Terry Waller, planning staff. I'd just like to point out that most of these items before you today are fairly minor amendments to existing agricultural preserves. In the course of reviewing these, though, we do check for consistency with the program, the rules of procedure, and make sure that they are continuing with their commercial agriculture, which is required by the program. The first item before you, I need to read each one of these into the record, I understand, so I will do that. The first one is AGP 2014-00003. It's a proposal by Lewis Feuerstein to alter the boundaries of an agricultural preserve to add land. And part of this request, as with most of these, will be also a second part to this, which is to come back with a contract. But the actions before you today relate to the agricultural preserves themselves. So later, Mr. Feuerstein will come forward with a request to rescind an existing land conservation contract and enter into a new contract for the property. It's currently in non-renewal, and of course, in the process, he's going to be adding 2.5 acres into the new contract. This property consists of 313 acres located within the agriculture land use category at 4811 La Panza Road. It's approximately 1,500 feet northeast of the community of Creston. The site is in the North County El Pomar Estrella sub-area planning area. The current use of the property is 73 acres in irrigated vineyard and 141 acres in irrigated alfalfa. The residual is in land that's has potential for grazing land, and that factors into the calculation for minimum parcel size that I'll go over in a minute. The property's 313 acres exceeds the minimum 40 acres necessary to requalify this as a prime land agricultural preserve. The minimum parcel size that's appropriate for it because of the mixed uses on the property is actually 80 acres. And the appropriate term is 20 years because the site is not located adjacent to the Creston Village Reserve Line, which would be the nearest village reserve line to the property. The Agriculture Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval of this request to amend an ag preserve. That concludes my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. Any questions of Mr. Waller? Seeing none, is there anyone who would like to speak on this item? Seeing none, Mr. Lloyd, you pass. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board. Ms. Arnold.
I'll make that motion to approve staff recommendation.
Staff's recommendation. Thank you, Mr. Meacham. With that, Madam Clerk, a roll call vote, please.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
And Mr. Gibson?
Yes. Item B.
The next item is AGP 2014-00001. It's a proposal by Hiatt Ranches, LLC, to alter the boundaries of an agricultural preserve. This is to reflect revised property boundaries from a lot line adjustment that's currently in process, and it also involves adding some land to the new contract. The resulting parcel will consist of approximately 380 acres within the agriculture land use category. It's located at 4890 Wasna Road, approximately 2.5 miles southeast of Arroyo Grande. The site's in the South County Wasna Lopez Suburbia planning area. The current use of the property, the primary use of it, is 110 acres of irrigated row crops, very productive agricultural land. The applicant's 110 acres exceeds the minimum 40 acres necessary to requalify as prime land agricultural preserve. The appropriate minimum parcel size for the agricultural preserve as amended is 160 acres. Again, this is based on a mixed use, irrigated row crops, and quite a bit of residual grazing land potential. The appropriate term is 10 years, and this is based on the term of the existing contract, which is customary to retain the existing term in these situations. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission also recommended approval of this request to amend an agricultural preserve.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. Questions of Mr. Waller?
I do have one, just because I should know this and I don't, but I'm going to take this opportunity to ask. So you just explained that the criteria for the minimum term is mm-hmm. the 10 or 20 years, but it's consistent with what it was before. But I've always wondered why some are 20 and some are 10. Was that just the era when they applied originally?
The state's requirement is a minimum of 10 years, mm-hmm. and in our rules of procedure, we have a little bit different arrangement. Most of the terms are 20 years unless they're within 1 mile of an urban reserve line or adjacent to, right next to, a village reserve line. Okay. So we have those two criteria. And the other thing that comes up is if they're just doing a lot line adjustment, we try to make it a little bit easier for people that have some kind of a boundary dispute or something. And so, you know, adding an additional 10 years to their current 10-year term, which is the term that's tracking on most of these older contracts. Eight, it's a proposal by John Decker to alter the boundaries of an agricultural preserve. And this is to reflect revised boundaries from a lot line adjustment with the neighbor, and that will be the next item. This property consists of approximately 340 acres within the agriculture land use category. It's located at 295 Monte Cristo Place, and it's approximately 1 mile south of the urban reserve line of the community of Cambria. Actually, it's exactly 1 mile. The site is in the North Coast planning area, and this is a rangeland property. It has over the minimum 100 acres of land with soil moderately to well-suited as rangeland. It actually has 225 acres, so it's a productive rangeland property. The property's 340 exceeds the minimum 320 acres gross that's necessary to qualify as a rangeland property, so it remains compliant. And the appropriate minimum parcel size is also 320 acres based on this rangeland capability. The term, the appropriate term, is 10 years because the site is located within 1 mile from the urban reserve line of Cambria. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval of this request to amend an agricultural preserve.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. No questions of Mr. Waller. I will open it to the public. With no request to speak, seeing no one coming forward, I'll close it to the public and move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Ray. And Madam Clerk, a roll call.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
And Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Item D.
The next item involves the neighboring property, and this is AGP 2013-00009. It's a proposal by Bradford Jones to alter the boundaries of his agricultural preserve. This is to reflect the revised property boundaries from the same lot line adjustment. This property consists of approximately 286 acres located within the agriculture land use category, also at Monte Cristo Place. And it's farther from, actually, almost 1.5 miles south of the urban reserve line of Cambria. And the site is in the North Coast planning area. The property is also a rangeland property and has 281 acres of land with soil rated as moderately to well-suited as rangeland as required by our rules of procedure. It remains compliant with the rules of procedure. The minimum parcel size that's appropriate for this property is 320 acres, also based on the rangeland capability and use. And in this case, the appropriate term is 20 years because the site is located further than 1 mile from the urban reserve line. This was the recommendation of the Agricultural Preserve Review Committee. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval of this request to amend an agriculture preserve.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. With no questions of Mr. Waller, I'll open it to the public. With no requests to speak and no one coming forward, I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board, and move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Meacham. And Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Item E.
Item E is AGP 2013-0011, and it is a proposal by Keith Martin to amend an agricultural preserve. And in this case, it's to reduce the minimum parcel size on the agricultural preserve. The property consists of approximately 74.224 acres. It's located within the agriculture land use category at 8865 Chimney Rock Road, approximately 8 miles northwest of Paso Robles. The site's in the North County Adelaide planning area. And the reduction in minimum parcel size is proposed because this property got conveyed out of a larger ownership, two legal parcels under one contract. And it had an 80-acre minimum parcel size on it, and at less than 75 acres, it was non-compliant. They wanted to do a lot line adjustment with a neighboring property, and it got a little bit complicated, but they have 24 acres planted in irrigated vineyard, so they qualify for a reduction in minimum parcel size based on the intensification of agriculture, and that allows them to have a 40-acre minimum parcel size for the preserve. It's an amendment to a larger preserve on this particular site, and that allows them to remain compliant with the program and proceed with a lot line adjustment with their neighbor, which did not need any amendment to its agricultural preserve because the boundaries are much larger and inclusive of both these properties. So this is only about a request for minimum parcel size reduction from 80 to 40 acres. The appropriate minimum parcel size is, again, 40 acres, and the appropriate term based on the current term of contract would be 10 years. And the recommendation from Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission is for approval.
Very good. Any questions to Mr. Waller? Seeing none, we'll open it to the public. This is Ms. Johnston.
North of Cambria. The property is in the North Coast planning area. This, again, is just a small addition of land through lot line adjustment, and all of the land that's being adjusted is going into or being requested to go into this slightly expanded agricultural preserve, and he will follow up with a land conservation contract to add it into the program. All the boundaries will be consistent with each other and should be good to go that way. The property basically came into the program as a rangeland property when the standards were a little bit smaller. The requirements. But since then, he's added 25 acres of irrigated orchard on class 4 and 6 soils, which would technically allow him to comply with the requirements for a prime land preserve. But because of the substantial amount of acreage that's still basically in a grazing land potential use, the appropriate minimum parcel size that's recommended to your board remains at 320 acres. And the appropriate term that's recommended is 10 years based on the existing term of the current contract, and the Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission once again recommended approval of this request to amend this agricultural preserve to add land.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. With no questions for Mr. Waller, I will open it to the public. Seeing no one coming forward, I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board, and move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Meacham.
Everybody's asleep there.
Is this a controversial one or what? And one more roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Waller, for as your usual fine work on these. That brings us to closed session. I have no request to speak on closed session, so I will close it to the public, bring it back, and ask council for an estimate.
Yes, read the Neal County Council about 20 minutes today.
Very good. Thank you. We will reconvene at 1:30. Thank you, Madam Clerk, and welcome everybody to our afternoon session. We'll start, as usual, with a report out of closed session, Madam Counsel.
Rita Neal, County Council. The board met in closed session and took no reportable action.
Very good. Thank you. With that, I'll entertain a motion on our presentation calendar. Thank you, Ms. Ray and Mr. Meacham. And with that, a roll call vote, please.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes. And I've asked Supervisor Meacham to handle the honors on our first resolution.
Mr. Lilly, would you mind?
There was some question as to whether this resolution was going to pass. But in the end, we looked at it. It didn't say anything about accepting your retirement. So, we'll just honor it.
You want me to start?
Yes.
Okay.
Please.
The following resolution is now offered in red. Whereas Dana Lilly is retiring from the Department of Planning and Building after 29 of dedicated and valued service, and Dana began his employment with the county on July 9, 1985, as an associate planner for Citizens Housing Task Force to assist in updating the county housing element and to assist in the preparation of the agricultural open space element of the county general plan. And whereas Dana was promoted to senior planner in August of 1991 and then to supervising planner in October of 2000, Dana both completed and directed the update to the county's housing element of the general plan 5 times as required by state law, each time achieving state approval of the updated element. And Dana played a key role facilitating development of the 10-year plan to end homelessness and establishment of the Homeless Oversight Council. And whereas Dana managed the 1997 update to the county land use element for the region surrounding the city of San Luis Obispo and the 2012 update to the economic element of the general plan. And whereas Dana's 29 years of dedicated public services will be missed by all. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors that Dana Lilly's retirement has been withdrawn and refused by the Board of Supervisors. But in all seriousness, you are hereby commended for his 29 years of conscientious service to the people of San Luis Obispo and his wished well, happiness, lots of golf, and many new adventures in the years to come.
There's a photo op.
Something you can use on your dartboard.
And I do believe Ms. Griffin has words to offer us here.
Yes, I guess I do. Although I liked Frank's initial, now therefore be it resolved. Have a lot of history. I'm sure Dana will remember our group houseboat trips to Lake Powell and Lake Mead that were a heck of a lot of fun. One hellish backpacking trip with Paul Crawford where Paul went down with altitude sickness. And then more recently, a lot of golf, including very recently, in honor of Dana's birthday, playing the hardest golf course I have ever played in my life. But he played fabulously, which was perfect for his birthday. Want to wish you happiness and in everything you do in the future. I know that this is an opportunity for you to spend some time having fun and spend some time with your aging parents that I know is very, very important to you, and wish you best of luck and a whole lot of golf, and I hope a whole lot of golf with me in the future too. So good luck, Dana. Thank you for everything you've done for the county and everything you've done for the department.
You're here. We're going to offer you the chance for comments here in a minute, but we do have one request to speak on this, former Supervisor Jim Patterson, and I'm going to ask him to come forward. It is our tradition to give you the last word, Mr. Lilly, as the honoree. And
we answer here, Dan.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairman Gibson, supervisors and staff. My name is Jim Patterson, and I had the pleasure of working with Dana the 8 years I served on the board and since. And I want to thank the board for recognizing his service to the county the past 29 years. And I especially want to thank Dana because, like so many county employees that I've had the opportunity to work with over the years, Dana goes far beyond his commitment to the county. He's really committed to the community. I've worked with him on the Workforce Housing Coalition, where we put together a roadshow to take out to the public to really inform the public about the importance of workforce and affordable housing. Dana was instrumental in developing that, as well as actually going out in the evenings and presenting to elected bodies and others about affordable housing. And also, as was mentioned, the Workforce Housing Coalition and the 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness. Dana was an integral part of that whole process and helped establish the Homeless Services Oversight Council. He serves on the Housing Committee of that body and offers insights on how to better advocate for affordable housing. We're going to miss him, but we'll be twisting his arm to stay involved. He's a wealth of information and a wealth of service to the community in the past and hopefully in the future. So again, thank you, board, and thank you, Dana.
Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Dana, too. I will generally miss him. I have found him through the years to be great help, somebody who is very responsive and very good with the public. I know when Frank and I first started with the economic development project, Dana was critical in helping us, especially as new board members, helping us move forward and provided and has continued to provide great help from the county staff to the EVC on that project. And so, a lot of kudos for your work on that, and I'll miss you, Dana.
Mr. Meacham.
Thank you. And as Supervisor Hill mentioned, when we first came on board, we asked Dana to help us out, and he did. But I know that over the time that I've been here, every time I've come up with an idea of something or other, and I've talked to my assistant, Vicki, she said, we ought to get Dana in here. And sure enough, Dana's the guy that he doesn't say what you can't do. He comes up with ways that you can do. And that should be the attitude of everybody. And I think that you're going to be missed there, big guy. Thank you.
Ms. Ray?
I've been making it no secret that I didn't want you to go anywhere, Dana. And I've known you for a long time, both on EVC and now here, and had a chance to really see you do your good work. But what I wanted to kind of point out to the crowd is when we went through that resolution, Dana's hands are all over our general plan. And the general plan is the document that drives this county. It says who we are, what we believe, and what we do. And Dana's mark on that will be forever, really, as that plan goes forward. And so it's more than just being a planner. It's someone with vision and someone with the ability to bring that vision into a document that's articulate and that drives the whole county. So as supervisors come and go and these things sort of morph over the years, those constants like Dana are just of such value, so we'll truly miss you.
Ms. Arnold?
Dana, I just wanted to say thank you, too. I've appreciated working with you over the years and really appreciate your dedication to this county. It's our good fortune. You dedicated your career right here in San Luis County, so thank you, and I wish you a lot of fun in your retirement as well.
Do today. I've been very fortunate to have been given the opportunity to serve the public and to work on so many really interesting and diverse projects. It's been great. I want to thank you, the county, for the satisfaction of seeing many affordable housing projects completed, for the sensation of really feeling alive when a major planning project ended up in a successful conclusion, the positive, respectful interactions I've had with many people, residents, business owners, nonprofit groups, and other public agencies, also for confirming that the public sector and the private sector can communicate and take action in a real positive manner. And I think the Economic Vitality Corporation has been a good catalyst to help with that. I'm going to miss some things I'm going to definitely miss all of the different people I've interacted with, elected and otherwise, but most of all, I'm going to miss the staff that I've been working with directly. It'll probably be a big shock for my system that day when I get up and I don't come into the office. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our second resolution also honors a long career in public service, and I would ask Phil Lowe, who's our retiring director of the Department of Child Support Services, to take the lectern. You know, as a department head, I think he's very close to the person we see the least here in chambers. He does tend to show up at budget time just to be sure, but it's not like we need to spend a lot of money on what he does. Over the years, his office has been exceptionally successful and does one of these jobs that I think the public doesn't as fully appreciate as they might. And the resolution here commends Phil on his retirement after 28 years of service with the County of San Luis Obispo. It reads as follows. Whereas Phil Lowe joined the office of the San Luis Obispo District Attorney in 1986, as a deputy district attorney before taking the helm of the District Attorney Family Support Division in 1993. And whereas Phil was appointed as the inaugural director of the newly formed San Luis Obispo County Department of Child Support Services in 2002, and will have accumulated 28 years of employment with the county before his retirement on December 19, 2014. And whereas Phil has performed all of the administrative duties of a county department head while also serving as the department's only attorney, appearing in court on a weekly basis to establish child support orders and prosecute contempt cases, and whereas under Phil Lowe's leadership, the San Luis Obispo County Department of Child Support Services was recognized by the California Department of Child Support Services in its annual report to the legislature as the top-performing child support program in the most recent year, and the top-performing agency in 9 of the last 10. And whereas Phil Lowe will truly be missed by all who know him and who have worked with him over the last 28 years, now therefore be it resolved and ordered by the Board of Supervisors that Phil Lowe is commended for his 28 years of dedication to the county mission, vision, and values, and be it also resolved that Phil is wished the best of health, happiness, and good fortune in his retirement.
Thank you.
In your direction. Mrs. Lowe, where's Mrs. Lowe?
Yeah.
We can.
No.
And we can hand that. We can hand that camera off to Miss Santisi at a point. So come. Yeah. So Phil's gonna.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, Mr. Buckshy?
Yes, good afternoon. Dan Buckshy, County Administrative Officer. I've had the opportunity to work closely with Phil the last couple years, which I've really enjoyed and have learned quite a bit from Phil in that time, and certainly would like to thank him for you know, all the leadership he's provided over the 28 years that he's worked here. And I thought I would, you know, outline a little bit of history because it's something that's easily forgotten over the past 12 years. You know, Phil spent a little over half of his career, roughly 16 years, as part of the district attorney's office, and then the past 12 as an independent department. And it was a really big change 12 years ago when the child support function was spun out from the DA's office. That was
the lectern is yours, sir.
Oh, thank you. So, you know, I feel like I've led a charmed life getting to live in San Luis Obispo to begin with. We're all really blessed that way, I think. And a beautiful wife, 3 kids that I've raised in our community, and a really tremendous staff, and they're all here. And can you guys stand for me, please? Please. They're the real reason I'm being recognized, and it's so easy for a director to take the credit for the accomplishments of a department. But these people work tirelessly, and they care deeply about the children and families in our community. And I don't think they ever leave any stone unturned when it comes to trying to find the money and trying to get that support out in a timely fashion to the children and the families. And it's been an honor and really a privilege working with each and every person here. And the hardest part about retiring, I think, is missing these people who are not just my colleagues, but I count each one of them as a personal friend. And you were really fortunate to have them here. And so thank you, but most of all, thank you as the staff for making me look so good. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Congratulations and thanks to both you fine gentlemen. We appreciate your service to the county. With that, we will move into the afternoon's business. When you're ready, Madam Clerk, if you would introduce our next item, please.
Item number 25, presentation of the General Plan Annual Progress Report for fiscal year 2013-2014, all districts.
Mr. Bergman, welcome back.
Thank you, Chair Gibson, board members. Jim Bergman, Planning and Building Director. Looks like Mr. Johnson just needs about 20 more seconds to set up, okay. And he will give you our General Plan Progress Report for fiscal year 2013-2014.
All right, very good. We'll go straight to the man, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here, and I have to help me this afternoon, Mr. Wilkin to my left, and he hasn't left. Mr. Lilly is going to also help out if you have any questions on housing element or the housing element or economic activities. The purpose of the annual report on the general plan is to inform you as to what's going on with the activities and programs associated with the general plan. And then it's also a state requirement, so this helps fulfill that requirement. But it's nice to be able to do it in a way that's interactive with the Planning Commission and the board. So I'd just like to take a few minutes to go through some of the highlights of what's transpired in the fiscal year 2013-14. As you may recall, the housing element, due to Dana and his team's effort, was updated recently. The land use and circulation element was reorganized. We also completed the complete community survey, and we streamlined permitting for photovoltaic systems. One of the things we continue to strive in the planning and building day-to-day operations is to bring higher level customer service to the community. We also have your board has adopted some ordinances, including the urgency ordinance for the Paso Robles groundwater basin. We completed ordinances to implement requirements for stormwater, and we implemented an Empower program ordinance. Empower is a program that allows residential homeowners to get financing and to save on their energy. As we move forward in the current year we are and into next year, there's some board priorities that are in progress. We will continue to work on the various water demand and supply amendments. Los Osos has two important issues moving forward, the community plan and its HCP. And then, again, renewable energy will continue to be important to the county and looking for ways to streamline those activities as well. Your board is aware of also that working towards improving workforce housing opportunities in the county and working with the home builders in coming up with amendments to bring to your board. Also working on the biennial report for the resource management system. We're pleased to announce that the North County Services Center has been up and running. We're seeing more and more activity up there. It's located at the Tascadero Library, and you can go online and see when we're open. We're pleased with that, and the staff that works that center is finding it. Annual report also reports on development activity. In terms of residential development, you can see on this chart, on this table, that we've seen an increase in the last couple of years in single-family development. Last 2 years, we haven't seen any applications or multifamily projects built in our county. And really, those, if you look back at 11, 12, that tends to one or two projects can sway that. So it's not the best metric to compare the ratio of single-family to multifamily in a given year, but to look at it over multiple years, and that's what we've done in our housing element. So I direct anyone curious about the long-term balance between multifamily and single-family to take a look at the housing element. In terms of affordability, again, this is an item that over the last five years, it just we haven't seen what the housing element's objective for affordability would be. Only hit about 15% on that. On the plus side, our department did help with allocating over $650,000 on home grants, and then we also were involved in seeing about $64,000 from our affordable housing impact fees going towards the helping construct 167 units. In terms of commercial development, again, this is a tricky one. We've seen an increase in the amount of commercial building permits processed. But in this last year, the valuation has been lower than the previous year. A lot of that probably has to do with not having new solar plants to build out in our county. Then lastly, I don't know if your board has felt this over the last year, but more activity with our hearing bodies, about 15% increase across the board with all the various items. Granted that the items you hear tend to be appeals on items that have already gone through the Planning Commission, but what's important to point out here is we're seeing a higher level of applications go through the Planning Department hearing process, and that's an advantage to people that have projects going forward, and that's generally a simpler process and takes less time to process for seeing projects move forward. That basically concludes my remarks. Our recommendation is you review this and if desired, take comments and then receive and file this, and we'll see you probably in March with our Mr. Bergman and a list of new priorities and adjusting where you see us headed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any questions from the board to Ms. Johnson at this point? If not, I do have one request to speak, so I'll open it to the public. Mr. Greening.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and a lot of very remarkable work is being done, and I think much of it is taking us in a good direction. Sometimes the language is symbolic. I'm still not, for example, aware of any projects that implement the unbundling of parking charges. If there are any in the pipeline, let me know. But, sometimes we can set a target, but then when people are just doing their day-to-day stuff, they do it the way they've always done it. I do want to highlight one of the things you discussed here that was in the report, because it's in a fairly key stage, and that's the renewable energy streamlining plan. We are now in the public comment period for the EIR on it, and this is a critically important EIR because essentially it would take the place of a lot of the environmental review that would otherwise be specific to projects. And when I started reviewing this document, I was quite surprised at the huge area that it actually covers. I was particularly surprised to find that it includes a good chunk of the Carrizo and even into the monument, it looks like, when you look at the way they draw the circles and so on. And so since this seems to be sort of an under-the-radar thing, I'm wondering, have the local advisory committees been told that this comment period is open and given an opportunity either to publicize in their own communities or collectively to make comments? Also, the Carrizo National Monument Advisory Committee is scheduled to meet a little later this month. Is it on their agenda? Again, as I was saying, I was surprised to see some of the lands being covered being so far out there. I thought the intention of the Renewable Energy Streamlining Plan was to bring these developments closer in to where the power was actually being used, rather than by placing it right in the middle of remote endangered species habitat. And when those large solar projects and their mitigations were considered, it was considered relative.
And many others have been notified about the Renewable Energy Streamlining Program and the availability of the draft EIR. The Planning Commission will be holding a study session on this matter on the 8th of January, and their first public hearing will be on the 22nd of January.
Very good. Thank you very much. With no comment or question from the dais, then we'll thank staff for bringing us this update. We do appreciate that as an annual event. And having been reported on the general plan, I'll ask Madam Clerk to introduce our next item, which seeks to modify the general plan.
Item number 26, a hearing to consider a request by the County of San Luis Obispo for general plan amendments to 1. Amend the county's land use element, local coastal plan, north coast area plan by changing the land use category of approximately 7,650 square foot, 0.18 acre portion of approximately 0.5 acre parcel from public facilities to commercial retail. 2. Amend Chapter 3, Resource Management System and the Inland and Coastal Framework for Planning Documents, Part 1 of the Land Use and Circulation Elements of the San Luis Obispo County General Plan, and approve the environmental documents prepared pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act, all districts.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Clerk. Ms. Bergman.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson, Supervisor Gibson, and supervisors. Two items in one. As we can only amend the general plan four times a year, we try to bundle these together. So Mr. Singwald will cover the first one in Cambria, and then Mr. Pedrotti will give the second item, which involves the RMS system.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Just for the public's benefit, I have requests to speak that appear one each on each of the two. We'll take a staff report and public comment, then a tentative motion on the first one. We'll come back on a tentative motion on the second and a final motion to complete the cycle. With that, Mr. Singelwald.
All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the board. So this item is a request by the county to change the land use category of a 7,650-square-foot portion of the Lions Club property in Cambria from public facilities to commercial retail. This item was previously considered by your board on September 23rd when the board approved a similar land use category change for the former library building in Cambria at 900 Main Street. At the time of the last hearing, staff recommended against including the Lions Club property in this general plan amendment due to a disagreement between the Historical Society and the Lions Club about the disposition of the historic schoolhouse building at 880 Main Street. However, at that last hearing, that disagreement was resolved, and your board continued the item to the next GPA cycle for the Lions Club property to also be redesignated. So here's the vicinity map. Project site's located right here. As I'm going to show you in the next couple of slides, the Lions Club property is split zone with commercial retail and public facilities. The former library building is located right here at 900 Main Street. The West Village Commercial District is located north of the project site. And to the south is designated public facilities. That's sort of the civic center of Cambria with the Jocelyn Recreation Center. Also, the new Cambria Library is located right here on a parcel designated commercial retail. So here's a graphic showing the existing land use categories. As I explained, the Lions Club parcel is here, and it's split zoned. The portion of the property at 870 Main contains the Main Lions Club Assembly Building, and the portion at 880 Main is designated public facilities, and that contains that historic Santa Rosa schoolhouse building. And here is the former library building, and Your board did approve that general plan amendment on September 23rd, and I'm pleased to be able to announce that Coastal Commission was able to fast-track that certification, and it's scheduled for certification next week before the Coastal Commission. So that will be complete as of next week if approved by Coastal, and Coastal staff is supporting this amendment. And the proposed land use categories, assuming the Coastal does certify the amendment for the former library building, that will be redesignated to CR, and with this amendment after it's forwarded to Coastal for certification, also the Lions Club would be designated completely CR for 870 and 880 Main. So we would have a continuous block of commercial retail going from this civic district all the way up through the West Village. Key issues, these are really the same issues I brought up with the former library GPA. As far as water, this amendment would not increase water demand in Cambria because any use would be limited by the existing CCSD water allocation on the property. And if a more water-intensive use were ever proposed on the site, that would require a coastal development permit and also verification of water availability from the CSD. Traffic, the Public Works Department initially raised traffic sites consistent with the purpose and character statements for the commercial retail land use category and potential impacts related to water traffic, parking, and public facilities land supply would be insignificant. With that, staff is recommending that you adopt the resolution approving the proposed general plan amendment for 880 Main Street, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Singwald. Any questions of Mr. Singwald? Seeing none, I will open it to the public. We have a representative of the Lions Club. Mr. Wilson, you wish to offer comment?
I was going to make my comments brief, but with the continued insinuation that the Lions Club had any issue with the Historic Society in Cambria at any time is false, and it continues to be reiterated by county staff that such an issue exists. So I do want to thank you, Mr. Gibson, for all the help that you give the Lions Club in Cambria for helping us push through the many bureaucratic headwinds that we face every year, particularly with our annual Pine Dorado event. Maybe while I'm talking about Pine Dorado and have the attention of the county, I'd just like to thank everyone for coming out and supporting our event this year. It was a fabulous event in Cambria over the Labor Day week, and I would like to thank our major sponsors, Lens of Cambria, Morro Bay Albertsons, Tappet Beer here in San Luis Obispo, and Harvey's Honey Huts, as well as the Cavalier Inn in San Luis Obispo. We fully support this zoning change to our Main Street property, and we wish that it was actually part of the California Coastal Commission plan that's being fast-tracked right now. The Cambria Lions are really concerned about why we were disassociated with the original rezoning of the old school of the old Cambria Library. It was county staff's original recommendation that we be included in that rezoning. Our property was then subject to public scrutiny where false comments and accusations were made. And at that time, we were then removed from that rezoning activity. So we really look forward to a unanimous approval of this zoning as a message to the technocrats and bureaucrats involved in this matter as to the poor handling of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. That was our only request to speak, and seeing no one else coming forward, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board. We'll not get into the history of this, but simply say that we are moving forward with the desired change in the land use category, and I will make a tentative motion to approve staff's recommendation.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Meacham. We'll take this on a voice vote. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, none. All right, so get Mr. Pedrotti to go, and we'll get introduced to item number two.
He's as angry as a lion.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Gibson, members of the board. Brian Pedrotti, staff planner. This item is the resource management system update. And essentially, it is an early warning system to allow time to avoid deficiencies and plan for solutions. What it aims to do is to assure that development can be supported by adequate resources, infrastructure, and services in the long term. And you can see here the item, the resources that are covered by the resource management system.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Brian, would you read that again, please? Because there's so many folks that I don't think that they really grasp what this is. And I think it's important. That first statement that you made pretty much says it all. And I want to remind some of the members of the public out there of exactly what this is.
Okay. On a basic level, it's a resource alert system. It allows time to avoid deficiencies and plan for solutions. And so the purpose of it is to assure that development can be supported by the adequate resources, infrastructure, and services in the long term. That's essentially what it is. We go back to the basic alert system of what it is. The key to the RMS is the assigning of levels of severity to each resource. And so, for instance, water supply, each groundwater basin gets its own level of severity. For roads and interchanges, each road or interchange gets its own level of severity. And the level of severities are 1, 2, and 3. They increase according to severity. At LOS 1, the resource use would reach capacity in the time that's required to expand capacity. LOS 2, you can see that it's the depletion of the resource is already occurring and has to decrease to avoid exceeding the resource capacity. LOS 3 is when the capacity of the resource has been met or exceeded. That isn't the case for water supply report. So let's go to the actual changes. The major revisions. The RMS update first will create a menu of recommended actions for each level of severity that recognize the board's discretion. So what does that mean? For instance, when a resource hits level of severity 3, instead of the board shall do X, the update recognizes the board's discretion and provides a menu of options, and then the board decides which options would best fit the situation. The RMS update also will incorporate criteria of other agencies. So, for instance, the Regional Water Quality Control Board, they already have a tracking system to implement facility upgrades, and RMS will just mirror this. And so you can see that the lead times change based on Regional Water's current tracking system. The update will recalculate lead times for water supply, wastewater, and roads. For instance, for water supply, you have LOS 1, 2, and 3. Those are set now at 1 at 15 years, 2 is 10 years, and 3 is 7 years. Those will all be increased. So LOS 1 would go from 15 to 20, LOS 2 from 10 to a range of 15 to 20, and LOS 3 from 7 to 15. The update will add freeway interchanges as a resource. Right now, it just has roads. So interchanges will be included, and those are interchanges with Highway 101. It will add parks, criteria, and actions. So parks are noted as a resource in the current RMS, but this will update it actually will include criteria and recommended actions for parks. And then it will also include an updated policy discussion of water resources, in particular incorporates ag element policies and conservation and open space element policies. So those are the list of major revisions. And how does this look actually in the RMS? If you can hopefully see this is table F. So this is one of the tables for a resource, in this case being water supply. And you can see that for level severity 1, we have a certain criteria, that water demand projected over 20 years equals or exceeds the estimated dependable supply. And for each of the level severity, here's 1, 2, and on the next slide we have 3. It decreases in years. And I'll just point out right now, on level severity 3, it says 10 years. That's a typo. That should be 15 years, as I described earlier. But for each of these criteria, there are recommended actions, and so that the board has discretion to take. They're all, as you can see, kind of recognizable actions that are oftentimes being implemented currently in some of our basins that have LOS 3. Conservation program, written plan for actions, projects and programs that will increase water supply or reduce water demand. And down to levels of severity 3, you have some more stringent options. Either cease issuing building permits or establish a program of water offsets. And so many of these were recommended by the Water Resources Advisory Council, which formed a subcommittee, and they provided ample comments, and many of those were included. I'll just go through a couple quick tables. This is for roads and highway interchanges. Much of the changes here were based on a consultation with County Public Works. And again, you have your criteria based on the level of service, which is a different LOS, obviously. But the recommended actions are, again, things that that have been implemented or could be implemented. Traffic impact fees, which have been done in many areas of the county. Studies and planning and different planning programs, and then seeking state and federal funding as applicable and securing that funding as you go down from level of severity 1, 2, to 3. Just a note, for schools, they're a bit of a different animal. The RMS provides a measure of the level of severity, but due to the lack of the board discretion in school capacity issues, no recommended actions are provided. So we have a level of severity assigned, and when we do the biennial report, we actually will have each school shown with a level of severity. We also have the remaining tables for all the other resources on slides if we wish to go into, you know, a particular resource at the end, but I'll stop with those right now. And as you can see, the RMS provides hearings on July 24th and September 11th, and they recommended approval with revisions. Just some of the benefits that are identified within the update in particular. One is being, as is being done with the water, wastewater, and other resources, it's we can better able track the status of parks and freeway interchanges, which are added to the RMS. Also, more time to plan for needed resources and infrastructure, and in particular, increased lead times for water supply. And then improved coordination between county and agencies. And again, this is recognizing that agencies already track a lot of this information, and we're bringing it into a single document. And so the recommendation is to hold a public hearing on the amendment, which was recommended for approval by the Planning Commission, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A, and take tentative action on the amendment today with final action on December 16th. In addition, we received a memo from the Parks and Recreation Department, which is attached at the back of the staff report, and they indicated that a number of the criteria they would like eliminated. There's actually three criteria for parks right now. One is acreage, and parks indicated they'd like that to be retained. But they indicated that the parks and rec element consistency and deferred maintenance criteria should be eliminated, mostly because the parks and rec element guides future facilities and already includes existing and proposed parks. And then for deferred maintenance, they had concerns that the maintenance needs are subjective and not easily measurable. So we have the memo. The current version you have in the packet includes all those three criteria, but the memo shows the changes with just the retaining of the acreage. And then we also have, I have available a legislative copy that shows all of the strike-through changes. If anybody wishes to see that as well, we can pull that up. And that concludes the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Pedrotti. Let me just ask for clarification. In terms of the letter from our Parks and Rec staff, is staff prepared today to make modifications to the framework, the RMS programs within the coastal and the inland frameworks that reflect the desires of our parks and rec staff, and does planning staff support those changes?
Yes. We had them send over a kind of a strike-through copy. We looked at it and made our own recommended changes, and that's what is shown in the memo after going back and forth with parks.
That's what's shown in the memo. So you have agreement with the Parks Department on a series of changes from what was presented as the hearing draft here. Mr. Wilkin?
Yes, that's correct. And I just wanted us to put up on the screen what the changes are so your board can see them. They're all included in one table, I believe.
Okay.
And so it's essentially striking out some criteria that were recommended by the Planning Commission.
And so this is our attachment five, in our attachment five of item two within this today's staff report.
Just to give an example, under level of severity one, mostly they divided it into regional and community parks, and as you can see, they kept the acreage criteria, which is an unincorporated community has between 2 and 3 acres of community parkland per 1,000 population. And this is consistent with what they already track partially in the Parks and Rec for each community.
Okay, and the rest of that memo is available to the clerk should we want to incorporate that in our... Okay, any other questions, Ms. Ray?
I'm trying to figure out it. There's a couple things here that are arguably outside the purview of the board, including highways and schools, because other groups deal with those. And there's some sense with roads and air, for example, because this board also sits on APCD and sits on the SLOCOG.
Over either. However, it's important for the county and the board to know the status of those resources before the board makes policy decisions on land use and approves development. So just knowing that information is valuable, and knowing the status of it. And then there are recommended actions that are recommended in the RMS as appropriate for the resources and in collaboration with other agencies that may have jurisdiction over those resources.
Mr. Meacham?
Yeah, just as a follow-up to that, that's a good point that Supervisor Ray raises. Is that spelled out in the RMS about the lack of authority over those areas?
Yes, I believe that there is a line in there about the fact that the county doesn't necessarily have jurisdiction over all these resources. I think one of the changes or one of the themes in this update is the recognition that other agencies play a large role in these resources and the need for collaboration between the county and these other agencies.
Thank you. One of the places we've seen that is in the development of community plans, and as we've reorganized the land use and circulation element, we may be going back to look at the future development of communities. We need to, understand what the school situation is, and if we need to start designating land or allow for the designation of land to provide for more school, that would be, I think, a collaborative effort with the school system to see when and where and how much.
And if I could follow up with that, yeah. Good point. But is this distributed, and do we get comments back from the school districts and from, like, Caltrans, stuff like that, so that way they know that we have to work collaboratively to get to some place? I know that we need to provide them information, but they need to provide us with information for our planning as well.
Yes, and part of the RMS system, is collecting of data from the different agencies. And we do collect data from the school districts and from the water providers and from our own departments, such as Public Works, on status of roads and interchanges.
Because the reason I raised that point is because I know we have heard criticism here at various intervals about the RMS, about some of those very issues. But I don't think, and that's why I wanted you to repeat the role and the purpose of this whole concept, because I think some folks think that we dream all this stuff up someplace in a dark room, I guess. But the information that you provide helps them make decisions as well as us.
Supervisor Arnold.
Yeah, I just had a couple of questions here. In our RMS, and I really appreciate and think it's very valuable to have an inventory of resources. That, of course, is important to the decision makers for any projects being considered. But can I just ask you straight away, is the RMS, every level of action on the right-hand side is recommended action, correct? It is not, there's nothing mandatory in the RMS itself.
That's correct, and actually the gist of many of the changes that we're making is to recognize the board's discretion, the board's ultimate discretion in making these decisions. So the recommended actions are not mandatory. They're up to your board to recommend or not, or to take action or not, as well as the implementation of those actions as your board sees fit based on the situation.
And it sounds like today we're kind of reiterating that or even focusing on that. Maybe it was getting away from that. And then is it just a rumor, is it true that our county is the only county or one of very few that go beyond using an RMS as a resource inventory and adds the level of severity 1, 2, and 3 to trigger action? That's where you see where I'm trying to go, is how much of this, and if the RMS document itself only recommends action, is action triggered in other policy documents at the county by the RMS? So
okay, I could.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
First part of your question, yeah. Maybe the planning director or others know if other counties have a similar system or not. I'm not sure.
I'm not aware of any that has a overtly devised system of feedback. But certainly when you look at the planning process, one part of the circle is that you need to go back and assess your resources and your inventory, and that helps you make future plans. So it's in there, but I think we pulled it out as a very special document that is there to serve the board as well.
In inland, we don't have any kind of project restrictions based on, oh, you can't do that because that's been shown by our RMS to be in level severity of 1.
Nothing automatic that I can think of, but the RMS does provide information for decision makers and discretionary decisions, and it provides information for environmental review on development projects.
Okay, and that it was just important to me, and I agree with Supervisor Ray on that. In some categories, like schools, I mean, if we're triggering mandatory things, somebody might be coming forward with a senior housing project, and maybe, you know, we've been triggered by some kind of LOS-3 on the school capacity, and then again, I see it happening in the Paso Basin on the water resource, in that we have an 800 square mile basin that's very diverse, and it's just the trying to blanket it. I mean, I've already seen the repercussions of that, blanketing that large of an area with that diverse available water resource, where people that don't have a water issue are being, affected by. And conversely, some of the problematic areas may never be remedied. And so, how will you ever be able to get? So, those are the kinds of things. And lastly, my last concern is, roads have always been in our RMS, but not highway interchanges. Is that a new, or I don't think so. Is that a new?
Yes. Your board asked that we add highway interchanges along Highway 101 in particular to the resource management system. And so that's what we've done, and we've included criteria, recommended criteria and actions that are similar or actually the same as for roads.
Okay. That is another concern I think Supervisor Ray brought up as well, and that could really be a chicken or an egg situation where we can't. There are no projects to put road fees into the pot because of a level 3 severity or whatever, but on a highway interchange versus roads that the county maintains, that is so far out of our jurisdiction, or at least the funding, oftentimes. And, you know, it's especially on the state highways, that we could be holding things up or really be have our hands tied for a long time, and there's really nothing we could do about that. And in thinking that sometimes that is not an issue, depending on what the project is as well, being able to do things. So as long as this is kind of remains at the discretion of the board and it is an inventory to be able to make better decisions, I'm comfortable. It's just when we limit ourselves or box ourselves in with things that we have no control over the solutions, then I think that could be problematic.
Well, it's true that the funding for highway interchange and other major projects like that is difficult and often a long ways out, but if you look at the criteria or the recommended actions for highway interchanges, there are no actions that talk about limiting land use or development. It's all geared towards finding the funds to actually build the project that will fix the problem.
And I guess that another example, I think, unless I'm mixing this up, I see Dave looking at me like, is Templeton, where the road fees got so high because of interchanges that that we just don't see any activity, even in zoned areas that would have an economic benefit in the area, but it's been kind of stymied by the fact that we're tying them to road fees that are large enough to change highway intersections.
Yeah, we're very aware of that problem and trying to work on it, and I think I'll let the Public Works representative address that.
Dave Flynn with Public Works. First, as Mr. Wolken points out, what's reflected in the 1, 2, and 3 levels in the tables for the RMS for interchanges is essentially what we do already. So there isn't really anything new that's being established here. But it does provide a means to really kind of prioritize where the problems exist. And then as both your role in the board or as Supervisor Ray points out on SLOCOG, it would give you a better decision point to assess where the priorities are and where funding's needed. In terms of how it affects like road impact fees that are put in place by your board, we always put in a component of what is that regional amount of traffic that's utilizing the interchange, and then look to COG to provide some regional contribution. That's the case like in upgrades that we have done in both Vineyard and Los Tablas in Templeton, where they participated to a regional amount. Certainly in the case with Willow, they participated also. But it is something where we do have to secure sufficient funds for that new development that's moving in just to...
Court, couple of things I wanted to bring up. One, I heard just here tangentially that something had arrived from the Coastal Commission this morning, and I heard nothing further about the issues that it raised. If it was anything significant or substantial, it should probably be discussed. Certainly, it causes the public to wonder, okay, what's this about? And so we might as well be transparent. Then the other thing is simply, yes, including interchanges probably makes sense, but that's not enough. If we're looking at transportation, you should be thinking as multimodally here as you will be tomorrow. Remember, it's in Grover Beach. I hope you all remember that. Tomorrow morning at 8:30, Grover Beach, you are 5/12 of the Council of Governments Board. And the Council of Governments Board will be looking at the regional transportation plan. And the overall goal is, quote, to create a fully integrated and intermodal transportation system et cetera, et cetera. I don't see the intermodal here. I'm looking at the table of contents for the project maps. This much is highways. Then we have non-highway projects. There's park and rides. There's intelligent transportation systems. Then there's the Class 1 bikeways, the Class 2 bikeways, the livability projects, safe routes to school. This is all important to the people who live here, many of whom are too old or too young to drive, but still need to get around. Levels of service, levels of severity affect everybody in all modes. If not this time, then by the next one, by the next biennial, let's make sure we're taking a complete, comprehensive look at transportation consistent with the hats you wear at the COG. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. That was our last request to speak, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board. Was there anything that staff wanted to conclude with, Mr. Petrotti?
Yes, we have the letter we received from the Coastal Commission staff this morning, and we had communicated with Coastal Commission staff a while ago, just initially about what was in the RMS, and after that, they have a concern about the definition of water supply, and actually about water demand and dependable supply. We do have it defined. In fact, the Planning Commission included a definition. They asked for, and we included a definition of dependable supply.
Was your referral to the Coastal Commission before the Planning Commission hearing? And we just got the letter back from the Coastal Commission. No further questions on that.
No. We did. We do have it defined in the RMS. Their concern, I think, according to their letter, is that it should be more of a definition that goes to an available water supply that can be counted as an existing resource, a physical amount of water. And we kind of leave the discretion, again, open on water supply side for the board. They also had a concern about the timeframes for sewer and wastewater. Because we're matching them to the Regional Water Quality Control Board actions, they actually are reduced. And so they just kind of recognized that this may bump some sewer or wastewater facilities out or into a lower LOS. And so they just said they'd be looking at that with a critical eye when this amendment came to them. And then finally, we had they asked that we retain existing language specific to Coastal Act Section 30254, which talks about giving priority over for visitor-serving land uses, coastal-dependent land uses, and commercial recreation uses over other land uses. And that language was kind of reorganized and taken out just because it was already in a coastal plan policy. It's actually a standard in the coastal plan, so it's already covered there. We could also add it in here again if appropriate, but staff felt that it was covered in the coastal plan policies. And I can pull that up as well. I've got a copy of that.
And so just for reference, just to the RMS system as presented by staff and as modified by the memorandum referenced regarding changes brought up by the Department of Parks and Recreation.
That's tentative action?
It is a tentative motion. Is that all good with the motion maker?
Yes.
It's all good with the second. With no further discussion, then on a voice vote, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, none. So then, Ms. Griffin, you always are good at leading us through the final formalities here. And,
actually, today you will not be taking final action because you do have one more item as part of this general plan amendment cycle. You'll hear that on the 16th. And so as part of your action on the 16th, you'll hear that final item, and then you'll take final action on the two items given tentative action today, as well as whatever you do with that final action on the 16th.
Okay, so it's not until the 16th, and could you refresh our memories as to what that other item is?
That other item is a package of cleanup amendments to our real property division ordinance as well as the land use ordinance.
Okay. All right. So with those two tentative motions, we have concluded the business of the day, and I will call the meeting adjourned. With thanks
Go Bearcats.
Thanks.